And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. You know, this is going to be another interesting day. We knew that it would have been time for us to get back with Stephen Lendman. And Stephen's been a great researcher and writer for Freedoms Phoenix and other outlets, you know, for it's been 7 years or more. Yeah, he was a retired engineer, sales, and it was a family business, so on. And he decided to spend his time writing. He's been award winning, you know. You got to meet with the Mexican president, as I recall. You know, Stephen, let's do that real quick. I know we got some big Ukraine news coming.
Today is a big day, Ernie. Today is a historic day. Let me correct one thing. I didn't get into what I'm doing now because my business was failing. We retired and we sold the business.
Oh, I didn't say you had any problem with your business. I just said you're...
I must have misunderstood you. I was trying to type something and listen to you at the same time, so I may have misunderstood you. No, I got to the retirement age and decided that was it, and I began writing sometime after that.
In 2011, Mexican Journalist Club, International Journalism Award recipient. Didn't you get to meet the president or something?
No.
I mean, Mexico.
No. As a matter of fact, a representative of the president attended the session that I was at, and I got to speak to all of Latin America. It was an extraordinary moment for me. I didn't get along. A lot of people got awards in December 2011, Ernie, and only a few of us wanted to speak. I asked to be able to speak, and they let me. They didn't have time to let everybody speak, but they let me speak. But I only got a few minutes, and it was really glorious, and it was translated line by line by a young woman who stood beside me so the Latin American audience that didn't speak English would know exactly what I said.
And what was it that you wanted to share?
You mean then or now?
Then.
Oh, I shared my gratitude. My opening line really said it so well, and I remember it just about. I wrote it after I gave this young woman the comments that I wrote. I added it at the last minute, and I began what I said by saying, today, this gringo from north of the... Yeah, I know the exact words. Today, this gringo from north of the border is proud to call himself a periodista. Periodista is journalist in Spanish, and for me it has special meaning, and for this club it has special meaning. It isn't the kind of journalist, according to the club, that we get in the mainstream media. You know, the people I call paid liars or scoundrels, Ernie. And there's going to be a barrage against Russia and Crimea today, you bet your life, because today truly was a historic day.
Okay, let's get to it before, you know, everybody gets raw on the edge of their seat here. There is some big news going on. You told Donna, she says, here's some really big, really big, really big news going on with Ukraine. All right, dump it on us, man. What's up?
Well, it began yesterday. Vladimir Putin recognized Crimean independence. He did it officially. Today he spoke to Russia's upper house, its Federation Council, and he did that about 5 hours ago he began. A historic speech, historic day, the things he said, and I'm writing about it now for tomorrow, Ernie. I will get it on the Freedom's Phoenix website. I truly call today, Ernie, a modern day equivalent to when the Berlin Wall fell. It literally is historic in that sense. Putin signed a treaty agreeing to the accession of Crimea into Russia. Everybody's rights will be respected. Russian-speaking people.
Okay, now wait a minute. Wait a minute. He recognized their independence or their annexation. I mean, you know, which one is it?
Well, let me explain it this way. 97%, in other words, near unanimity of the Crimean people want accession to Russia, union with Russia. They want to join Russia. Virtually, almost unanimous. About 2.5% said no, and it was something like 0.72% of ballots that were discarded because of irregularities. Less than 1%. It was 96.77% of Crimeans in the referendum that was held on Sunday support union with Russia. Of the Russian people in Russia, 92% of Russian people support union. The upper and lower house of Russia's parliament overwhelmingly supports union. There is no way that Putin could go any other way. He has final say on this, Ernie. But this overwhelming groundswell for the Crimeans to join Russia, there's no way he could do anything else. And I must say this, the long-standing historical history of Crimea is tied to Russia. It's certainly tied to Ukraine because Ukraine was part of Russia, but it's part of Russia, and today's Ukraine is not the Ukraine of yesteryear. Today's Ukraine is run by illegitimate neo-Nazi putschists, a coup d'etat, no legitimacy, reckless people, dangerous people. The Crimeans overwhelmingly want nothing to do with them. I would want nothing to do with them. Just imagine if this bunch, which I call mob rule, neo-Nazi mob rule, just imagine if they took over Phoenix, Ernie. You'd want to move out and go someplace else.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about who these guys are, all right? Now, we have the Ukraine, and then it's the, let's see, what do we got here? We have the Ukraine. To its west is Poland, south is Romania, north is Belarus, we have Moldova, south of Romania, Bulgaria. It's on the Black Sea.
Oh, yeah. Now, strategically, I think it borders seven countries.
Let's go ahead and kind of walk this through so people understand the geography. If you're in the Mediterranean, you have Italy, the boot there. Then to the east of that, you have Greece. You know, for some reason, I thought Greece is to the west. Anyway, you have Italy, Greece, south of Greece, the Mediterranean Sea. You go east of Greece is Turkey, then south of Turkey, Cyprus. Then across, east of Cyprus, you got Syria, and then down below, you got Israel. So it's an Israel thing. It's kind of, you know, not too far away. Now, as you go through Turkey, Istanbul, there's a, I don't know if it's a canal or it was natural, but anyway, it was opened up to where from the Mediterranean you can go into the Black Sea. Now, in the Black Sea, it's their only, Russia always needed, wanted, had to have a warm water port. Without that port or the access to the Black Sea, you know, then you get frozen in a lot of places in the Baltic Sea, North Sea, the whatever up there, it's cold sea. Now, the Black Sea is surrounded by, on the south, Turkey, on the north, Ukraine. On the east, Russia is where they had the Olympics, Sochi Olympics. It was not lost on me that all this Ukraine-Kiev stuff was going on during the Sochi Olympics. And it was like, you know, can't just let Russia, you know, have some spotlight without some controversy, so we need to go and, you know, be buttheads in some way.
Oh, yeah. It was planned that way, Ernie. It absolutely was planned that way. It was a Western plot to do something to disrupt the Sochi Olympics.
So when we come back, we'll get a little bit more. I'm going to go ahead and have several more maps. Donna, go ahead and get us some maps of Crimea, Ukraine up here so that we can, yeah, just put it up there. So you guys can see the geography here. You know, it's geopolitics, you know, supreme. We keep hearing about Georgia. You know, that's on the east side of the Black Sea, southeast of Crimea. Crimea, very strategic.
Rhodes. It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Okay, let's go ahead and take a look at the world. United States over here in the Western Hemisphere. Big, badass Russia and China over here in Eurasia, whatever. Now, the Mediterranean, those of you on the video, here's Spain, France, Northern Africa, Mediterranean. Now, let's go ahead and zoom in a little bit. Now, here's Israel, Egypt, Turkey, Greece, Italy, Black Sea, okay? Now, the Black Sea is connected by water from the Mediterranean, and it's where naval bases for the Russians are on Crimea. Crimea is connected to the Ukraine. It's this little, I don't want to call it peninsula, I guess, that, and then there's a smaller body water up here. I'm not sure what that is, but the what we have is this area right here is what is going. Now, Sochi, there's the Olympics right over here, all right? Black Sea. Here you have Ukraine to the north up here and Russia. And what happens? They want access to a warm water port, Black Sea. And it's right in the smack middle of everything. You know, it kind of has its safety out there as a peninsula in the Black Sea. You have Russia has its naval bases on it. It has access to the Mediterranean. It is now, of course, they try to shut that off, and that's like guaranteed war. You know, there's going to be saber rattling on that. Turkey to the south. And we got all the Middle East stuff going on here. Crimea is like a diamond in a ring, you know? And for us to, I'm not even sure what the U.S. was thinking. So, you know, Putin, Mr. KGB, said, you know what? We already got our bases there, and send more guys and it's ours. You know, peace out. And keep Ukraine. I mean, you know, Crimea is what they really want anyway. So I'm going, okay. Then they got this Georgia thing going on to the east. So Stephen, I need to understand what do you, you know what genius was, you know, propping up these, whoever, I mean, of course they had legitimate problems with their government in Ukraine. I mean, you know, I got legitimate problems with my government here. So the problem is that it was funded and amped up and kind of they had their version of Occupy Ukraine or Kiev or something. And it just kept getting amped up, certainly during the Sochi Olympics. And it was for them just to have enough people to get into the parliament building to go, and this central banker is now head of the country and he's going to go meet with Obama. And now, and here's the World Bank and the IMF and kind of we're done. And I go, whoa, man, it was scary at how fast they did this. And I'm just going, you know, the people, they're quickly going to find out what happened to them. Are they starting to find out? Do they know the people claiming to be their leaders now? I mean, what's going on?
There's so much going on, Ernie. I mean, it is really astonishing. I think I stressed when I came on the program last time that the issue with Ukraine and Crimea is really an issue of Washington wanting control over all the former Soviet republics, 16 in all, Russia being one. Washington wants control over the other 15. Ukraine is the crown jewel. It's the largest by far. It's a very large country. It's strategically located in Central Europe. It's got important industry. It's got the richest agricultural land in Europe, some of the richest in the world. There's a name for it, a black soil or something to that effect. Very rich, so very valued. And American and Western agribusiness, European agribusiness, dying to get their hands on this stuff. I mean, just steal it at, you know, fire sale prices, or just steal it outright. They want it so they can profit hugely at the expense of Ukrainians.
Well, and, when the Soviet Union under Stalin was, you know, he's trying to feed all the people and have the collectivist central farming kind of whatever, the breadbasket, a lot of that was Ukraine. And so it's very...
Oh, yeah. Well, it's more than... And Ukraine is called the breadbasket of Europe.
There you go. So now what was the politic in Ukraine? How did it get deteriorate so bad that this was even possible? And what did they create for them to sprint towards the West? And these guys that they did, they're just thugs. I mean, they were just, you know, people they pulled out of, IB Hitman phone book or something. I mean, you know, where did these guys come from?
Well, let me just finish what I was saying before. The other part of Washington's agenda is to get all of these former Soviet republics and Warsaw Pact countries like Poland, Hungary, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, former Warsaw Pact countries, as part of NATO, to get U.S. bases on their soil targeting Russia with long-range nuclear-armed missiles. That's the other dirty part of the game. And that's where Putin draws the line, because Ukraine, she has a 1,400-kilometer, roughly 1,000-mile border, roughly about 1,000-mile border with Russia. Can you imagine? I mean, just imagine nuclear-armed missiles across Mexico's border in the south, across Canada's border in the north, all pointed at America's heartland. You think anybody in Washington would tolerate that for a minute, Ernie? Well, they shouldn't. Well, they wouldn't, and they shouldn't. And for sure, if I ran things in Washington, I wouldn't. And I forget your question.
Well, no, my thing is that, of course, Yeah, Latvia and Lithuania and Belarus.
Ukraine, I know your question.
Go.
How do these thugs in Ukraine do what they did?
Yeah, because they're going to do it with these other countries. Whatever the hell they did, if they pulled off Ukraine, they got the others just sitting there like dominoes. You know,
yeah, but it's not them. They were hired. You know, guns for hire. That's what they are. Guns for hire.
Well,
they
literally guns for hire in Belarus. There's going to be guns for hire in Latvia and Lithuania. Hell, they're going to be sprinting to the front of the pack. Pick me, pick me, pick me.
Oh, were there guns for hire in Syria? There were guns for hire in Libya? This is the way Washington plays the dirty game, along with its rogue European partners, Britain, France, Germany, a few others. That's the dirty game they play. Plus, you know, their regional allies, whoever they may be, in the Middle East, it's Saudi Arabia, it's Qatar, it's Turkey. It's always Israel. Israel is involved in all of America's wars. Israel's dirty hands are all over the Syria story, all over the Ukraine story, all over everything America gets involved in. And even when America gets involved in places like Central America, Central America, or South America, Israel's dirty hands are involved in this thing.
Why?
That's the dirty game. What? Well, I mean, they just simply partner in their own imperial enterprises. America helps Israel in the Middle East and things that Israel wants, and Israel returns the favor by helping America with its imperial thing.
I understand, the players. I still, nobody ever asks why. You know, and even less often do you get to find the answer. You know, I'm like, why do we risk thermonuclear world war
Indeed.
With a KGB guy, you know, and we're pissing off China already. They have a bunch of our debt. They know where our weaknesses are. And it's like, we're doing this on purpose. There's somebody else calling the shots for some other stupid freaking reason. And for them to have Lagarde and the IMF and the World Bank, you know, just stand, it's like, I don't know, they want their gold, they're going to leverage their people, they're going to collateralize their something. Is it a financial thing? I need more understanding. We'll be right back. I need more. Man, you're not asking the right questions or something, Stephen. I'm telling you, this is bullshit. You know, these guys I can't even fathom what their long-term or even short-term thinking is. Okay, yay, we got our Shah in there. We got our thug in there. We got a little neo-Nazi guy in there. What? So they can have another election later. Oh, but now we're going to have a real election and more popular, get rid of this guy and that. You know, if he's that bad, he's already on the chopping block. So I'm just going, something else is going on.
Oh, I can tell you what the reason. I can tell you what the end game. The end game is very simple. I can explain it in two words: global domination.
Yeah,
Washington
but
wants
see, they're
global
just,
domination.
They're just crazy.
Well, they are crazy.
Okay,
they're lunatics. I mean, this is the way world wars begin. And, you know, I mean, there were no nuclear weapons in the first two wars until the very end when the Second World War was over. That's when nuclear weapons were born. And now we got nuclear weapons all over the place. And even countries like Ukraine can produce a dirty bomb. So, you know, you can destroy the people in a city without knocking down any buildings.
Yeah, no, see, my thing is so obvious at this high level, it's their begging for a conflict. They need something. You know, the economy's ready to take a dump, and they need a good old-fashioned Cold War, hot war, you know, the Russians are coming kind of bullshit. There is something else going on. You know, especially when they got on the front lines. I mean, it would heck, the Molotov cocktail fires didn't even burn out yet before you got the IMF and the World Bank standing there. I'm going, what the hell was that?
Oh, well, I mean, that's part of the dirty game. I've written a little bit about the IMF coming in. Ukraine's economy is really in the tank, Ernie. I mean, it's virtually on the verge of bankruptcy. They have almost no reserves left, and they're draining them at an extraordinary rate. And if they don't get financial help by the end of this month, they will be completely broke. The IMF game is to make ordinary people pay for the loans that the IMF makes. And I say about the IMF, they make street, you know, mafia loan sharks look respectable by comparison. I mean, literally, it's that bad.
No. I understand. You know, what they're doing is just how, I know what they do. It's just how fast that they, it is already in place. You know, I mean, it's like, you know what it was like? It was like when they did the United States Constitution, and the first thing they did was get a loan from the Bank of England to pay, you know, the war debt and all this other crap. And all of a sudden, the American people came financial slaves again back to the bankers. And I'm going, you know, well, what the hell is going on here? The ink wasn't even dry. Hell, I don't even think there was any ink. You know, it's just, we be in charge, you know. And I don't even care who those are. You know, I'm like, yeah, they're bad guy, good guy, this guy, that guy. I don't care. You know, whatever. You know, it's somebody else other than the people. And I'm wondering what the people are thinking in Ukraine. Whatever they think, you know, it's based on BS. They're getting off of whatever anyway. So
they're going to wake up and realize that they have been absolutely screwed.
Well, I mean, Crimea, screwed. They're going, well, Putin, come save us from the evil imperialist hordes of the U.S. Oh, my God.
It's happening right now in eastern Ukraine. There were protests all over eastern Ukraine, just like what happened in Crimea. So, I mean, we really could see a clash of civilizations, the eastern part of Ukraine versus the western part, and that's why I say the risk of civil war is extremely
now,
high.
Now, there's something else going on. This is a distraction. You know, when you hear me say, you know, the Golden Gate Bridge, St. Louis Arch, toast, you know, just as a distraction. I mean, there's something. I mean, this is ready. This is like a comic book. All right, here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
You know, I'm, you know, Stephen's doing a lot of research on this, and they, them, those doing bad and whatever and so on, and I have simple questions. You know, when you hear me talking about it, I go, you know, St. Louis Arch, Golden Gate Bridge, toast. What do I mean? You know, it's a distraction, false flag, whatever you want to let them come, pay them to come. You know, this FBI, you know, how many, you know, mentally challenged Islamic individuals that are 17 years old, can we get the strap on something? I mean, you know, it's just, it's made you look. And it's so easy to do when you got just some whacked out guys and enough cash and a few people can kind of, but you know, a lot of times you gotta be scraping the bottom of that barrel. I mean, especially with the way the internet and communication, everybody knows everybody is somebody or something, you know, you're really having to, you know, stretch to get some of the guys to do what you want them to do. And then you got the neo-Nazi kind of whatever the guys and we're in charge of Ukraine. And the first thing that comes in, this is what tipped it off for me. Was the IMF and the World Bank standing there, you know, right? Because I remember when this happened in the United States Constitution, Art Hamilton really pushing this, and he wanted to have this, you know, well, if we don't have a federal government, how are we going to support a sustained war? as if that wasn't the best reason for not doing it. And what happened was, is Art Hamilton's father-in-law was a merchant in Manhattan that had ties to England and the bank and all that. And immediately after, you had, oh, we're going to, you know, take care of all those Continentals. Yeah, we're going to pay them off. We're going to take on the debt. We're going to pay it off. What's the first thing they did when they did the Constitution is they took out a loan from the Bank of England. And here we go. Well, the same thing is going on in Ukraine. They got financial problems, you know, everywhere, and they're going, people are not happy, you know, and they, you know, pumped up how bad the bad guys are, as if that would be hard for us to do for our guys. And they go, hey, you need to change, guy, have a change, this guy, and they ran, we're the first ones in the parliament, we win, take a vote, it's me, I'm in charge, and where do I sign, and let's go White House and meet with Obama. And I'm just, and what do they want? You know, well, whatever they get out of Ukraine, but you damn Skippy, man, Crimea there in the North Black Sea, there, the Navy bases of the Russian kind of Tsar, and they go, you know what? Crimea, you be free. You're ours, or you're annexed, or we recognize your separation from, and it's ours now, or something. And I'm going, this is dangerous. And I'm going, who in the hell cares? So I need to understand what is really, it's like it's on purpose. We need a warm war, cold war, hot war. We need a war. Got to have a war. And these people in Washington are screaming for war. Got 2014 election cycle coming up. Who's going to be the peace guys? We got 2016 presidential cycle coming. Who's going to be the peace guys? At the same time, even Rand Paul, you know, still like saber rattling on Iran. You know, why? What the hell do we care? How much do I got to know about Crimea? Who gives a crap? Well, obviously we got to. So I'm just going, Stephen, help me out here. And if you don't know, you need to go find out. What the hell are they doing? Why is this so important? Why are we involved? Why is the U.S. behind? Why? Help me.
Well, Ernie, number one, Crimea is very important. Just the way Sarajevo was important in 1914, the prelude to World War One, and just the way the German-Russian the German-Polish border was important in September 1939 when Hitler launched World War Two by a fake invasion, well, a real invasion of Poland based on a false flag incident. I mean, little incidents can become major conflagrations, and what's happening now in Crimea and in Ukraine could literally be the inception of events that will snowball out of control because one side just goes a little bit too far, and the other side may challenge it, whether responsibly or irresponsibly, and events escalate, and all of a sudden you've got a conflict between two powers. It is really inconceivable to me. I shocked my head in disbelief that two superpowers, and nuclear superpowers, when we put it that way, Russia isn't a military superpower other than its nuclear force, but between America and Russia, they have over 95% of all the nuclear weapons in the world, and they have long-range intercontinental ballistic missiles with pinpoint accuracy able to hit and wipe out any city or any location in each other's countries. Can you imagine these countries wanting to go to war with each other? Can you imagine nuclear missiles flying back and forth? I mean, the very thought of it is absolute lunacy.
You know, I know the language that they're I would imagine. You're having Obama, which is really, he's mouthpiece of, I don't know, whoever the heck is really running things. And then you have Putin, which is probably the guy really running things, okay?
Oh, sure.
So you have Putin, you know, Mr. KGB gets up there and head up and, you know, and how, you know, much do I shave my chest? And he's standing up there on his horse with his gun to go whip ass. And then you have Obama and these guys, and whoever those are, they think that they're perceived as more powerful when they have a, you know, Merkel, you know, Cameron, you know, all these guys in a different, whoever the hell, Holland, who cares? You know, the Italy, France, Spain, UK. So, I mean, all these guys, they get up there and they're going, ooh, we're all against you. And you have this figure that's built up like Putin looking at him. Yeah, and it takes all you to even talk to me, okay? So it's just perceived as all the little guys that kind of, like mice or something up against the elephant, and they think they can scare the elephant. And the elephant, I don't know if that's true, but the elephant get too pissed, he just squish him a mouse. So I'm just going, I don't understand what their perception is. There must be some back-end deal, and it seems like there is a game. This is already set up. We're going to take this, you get this, we get to do that, we have this financial problem, we got, you let us, you do it, and we kind of, and then I can see what Russia would do. He'd go, okay, well, we're going to play self-determination game, and we're self-determined Crimea, and we'll self-determine Eastern Ukraine, and we'll self-determine Belarus and Lithuania and Latvia. Will self-determine, and Georgia gets to whatever, and Islamic, problem that we got in here, and we're going to go squish on that, and you're going to be allowed this. There's a game going on behind the scenes, and we don't know what it is.
Well,
I guarantee freaking T it.
Well, I know what it is.
Between Putin and the West. I mean, they have already negotiated whatever the hell is going on. They're doing it right now, and all this other stuff is just theater.
Well, negotiations U.S. style, Ernie, is Washington rules, our way or the highway. We're boss and what we say goes, and tough. If you go against us, then we'll target you for regime change or whatever. I mean, again, America's game is to literally surround, it's to dominate all the countries surrounding Russia and China, dominate them all, have U.S. bases right on their soil, and Putin, I believe, Putin, as a geopolitical leader, governs very responsibly. As an economic leader at home, I take great issue with his policies. But I'm leaving that out of the equation because we're talking about potential war and peace now, and it has nothing to do with whether you run your economy well or you don't run it well. But Putin, I consider a very responsible leader. He respects the national sovereignty of every other country. He doesn't attack or invade any other country. This is the way he's run his presidency.
Well, what the hell's going on with Georgia?
What he did in Georgia, I mean, completely, the Georgia story was completely mistold, completely mischaracterized. There are many, many Russian nationals in Georgia at the behest of Washington, this fascist president that Washington installed as the president of Georgia. He's now replaced. His tenure expired. Mikhail Saakashvili. I mean, he's a thug, the kind of a thug, just the way the ones are in Kiev right now. He invaded. He killed 17 Russian nationals before Russia came in to protect their own people. That's what Putin did.
Okay, more with Stephen Lenman on, way more than I ever wanted to know about Ukraine, Crimea, Black Sea, Russia, Obama, who cares? Well, the theater's there for us to look at. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
The United States and European Union imposed personal sanctions on Monday on Russian and Crimean officials involved in the seizure of Crimea from Ukraine, as Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree recognizing the region as a sovereign state. Blah, 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 blah. This is what, you know, the United States and European Union impose personal sanctions on individuals. So they go, you know, if we got any kind of say in some kind of trading with and bank accounts of and these Crimean officials and thought they had in Russia and individuals, the entire weight of the European Union, United States against these individuals, we target the individuals. And So these sanctions are not even against, I guess, Russia or Crimea, because it can't. And he goes, you know what? See the spigot right here of gas and oil? Let me turn that a little bit. You're off. Now what? You know, there's something else going on. I mean, you understand my concern, Stephen?
Well, I understand your concern.
They're not answering the right questions. They're not even asking them.
Well, I mean, to me, the situation is crystal clear. I mean, this is part of America's long-term imperial ambition, literally to dominate one country after another. You could go back to the mid-19th century.
No, it's already. Not. It's not America. It's these, whoever they, them, those are in charge of this thing. It's not me. You know, it's not the state of and this guy and that guy. It's getting smaller and smaller and smaller, too. Even the Pentagon. Oh, we need fewer troops to rat us out. We need a drone army or something. I mean, it's like I'm watching Star Wars. You know, I mean,
they have such super weapons, so what do you need troops for? They don't need F-16s anymore. They've got drones.
Yeah, I've seen this before. You know, it was called, Hitler, Nazi Germany kind of parallel crap. It was just, they're crazy. No, I mean, literally, there's something else going on. They may not be crazy if there is something else. We're going to a new world order of but the tighter your fist, the more star systems that leak between your fingers. I mean, there's something else going on. When the Chinese, you know, are they able? They thought they had us, you know, by the short hairs, and here we got Russia doing the same. We're gonna liquidate our U.S. Treasury debt, and then it goes down. There's somebody else back here sitting there laughing their butt off out of the National Settlements Bank or somebody's going, yeah, it's all part of the plan. Let it nuke, and then we come back 3 years later and we get a discount. I mean, something else is going on, and nobody's pursuing that. All this theater that's going here is just stupid. There's something else.
Well, really, what's happening in Ukraine right now and in Crimea, Ernie, is no different than what Washington did in Afghanistan. You know, the tactics differ. The strategy, the ultimate goal is the same. The tactics differ. The strategy differs. America invaded Afghanistan, Iraq, bombed Libya, waging a proxy war in Syria. So this Ukraine is really the same thing, except the tactics are entirely different.
Well, none of
no
that
invasion,
worked.
No bombing.
None of that's working. You know, Afghanistan is like, you know, I don't think I'm going to be vacationing there anytime. Syria is still like, you know, Assad's still, I don't even know what the heck they're planning there. You got Iraq is in turmoil and more deaths now than heck during a lot of the occupation.
America is going bankrupt in the process.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, maybe the reason why. There's something else. Roman Empire, go give us your gold kind of something. I mean, something else, Steve. There's something else. And I need to find out who knows what the something else is.
A guy I wish was still living, and I have the honor and joy of having him on my radio program one time a number of years ago, Ernie, Chalmers Johnson, a former consultant to the CIA, just a marvelous thinker, geopolitical thinker, and I was so disappointed when I couldn't get him back. He begged off because of ill health without telling me anything that was going on, and maybe a year and a half later, he died. It was a great, great loss, but he understood this stuff.
Wasn't he the author of Blowback?
Yeah, a trilogy. Blowback was the first book. Nemesis was the second one. And I forget the title of the third one. I've read all three books.
We had him on a lot on Charles' show. He was a big fan.
Oh, that's wonderful. And really wonderful. I did a review of his book, Nemesis, a very long review, and that connected me to him. He thanked me very much for what I did, and he just wanted to get the story out. And one of the scenarios that he compared America to the Roman Empire. You know, the Roman Empire went down because it overreached. I think he used the term overstretch. You know, it just didn't more. It bit off more than it could chew, and you know, it lasted a few hundred years.
But you know my point, Stephen, is you look at the Roman Empire. This is what I'll bet you. You know, there was a lot of the figureheads, maybe even the Caesar, and you had all these guys, and they didn't do too well, and they weren't kind of. But the guys that were in charge, the half a dozen, the dozen, the 20 guys that were the really ones pulling strings and doing, you know, it was that few. If you got a Senate, it's who controlled the Senate. So I'm just going, okay, so these few guys in the Roman Empire, as it came crashing down, I guarantee freaking that they had no shortage of slave girls, okay? I guarantee they had a nice place to ride out the storm. I guarantee that there was a plan, and they did okay and fine, and they got theirs, and everybody else could suck it. And I'm going, the exact same thing is going on now. And these people that think they're in charge, they get to push the buttons and move the dials and flip the switches, but there is something else going on. It's so obvious to me because I intentionally don't get bogged down in the details. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. What is the overall thing going on here? You know, there's something else going on.
It comes down to two words. America wants global dominance. And by global dominance, I mean all nations in the world.
Now, see, it's not America. I don't believe that. It's somebody controlling America.
It's the power structure controlling America, for sure. I mean, the people in government in Washington are puppets. They're puppets, Ernie. They're absolute puppets. They're all picked in advance. Presidents have no power at all. It's the power structure that controls them that has all the power.
Amen. What's that?
We absolutely agree on that. Well, the power structure is what I call the moneyed interests of America. So you've got Wall Street, you've got big oil, you've got the agribusiness, you've got all the other big corporate interests. These mega corporations, the oligopolies, these monopolies, these are the powers that control everything going on in America. They write all the legislation that Congress passes, every single bit of it of any importance that matters to them. You know, they don't care about gay rights and stuff like that, but they care about what runs to their bottom line. They write all of those laws. Obamacare, that absolute piece of crap that we're stuck with. We certainly agree on that. And they wrote the law. WellPoint Health, big healthcare company, along with other insurance companies, they wrote the law. They got what they wanted. You know, they had to give a few crumbs to ordinary. The crumbs amount to nothing. You know, some people who never had insurance before have it. So anybody who had nothing, if they get anything, it's better than what they had before. But the rest of us, Ernie, you, me, and the majority of most people in the country got absolutely screwed by this bill. But it's one piece of legislation after another. So they can make money, and they could do it at our expense. That's all the corporations care about. They want to make money.
Okay, you know, I'm pulling out all, you know, I do my best to avoid this crap, you know, and I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to, Donna, you know, start pulling in the boys. We got Steven, we'll get Paul Craig Roberts. We're going to make the press for the first time for me to really kind of, okay, it's time for Ron Paul. Because, you know, blah, 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 you're still voting. I don't care about that. I want to know about what's going on geopolitically here. There's something else. I'm going to, you know, once they get sick Ernie on it, you know, I'm telling you, Stephen, they go, you know, nobody ever asks why. I'm going to find out. I'm you know, because you pissed me off. You know, I'm just going to, you know, I'm like, all right, you want me to find out, blah, 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 blah. Why? Because, you know, the thing is, you know, Putin has a very powerful weapon. And it is, you know, he knows just as much as everybody else just how economically sensitive we are and vulnerable we are. When you say, oh, you want your gold back, Germany? Well, we'll pay it in installments. You know, when we'll do, you know, there is something else going on. And if all they got to do is wave a checkbook and Russia, yeah, I tell you what, we'll give you some concession of oil here and a little bread here and, you know, some wheat over in land and kind of, you know, I mean, it's over. You know, what are we going to do? When you say America, I don't even equate. That's why I see a lot all over the internet, and certainly on like Lou Rockwell or something. They really start using the term USG a lot, you know, and not USA, USG. So they're referring to the United States government. It's not America. It's the United States government, whoever the hell that is. And I tell you, Stephen, I'm going to keep checking back with you because you got all the goody, but I'm telling you, I need to answer why. I mean, I know global hegemony domination of the, okay, why? I mean, I don't know, you're not going to be in global control, global milking of the money of the distraction of something. I mean, you know, there's something else. It's not just, you know, we got more of our risk pieces over more, you know, geography. It's something else. Something else. Help me out with something else. Will you, Stephen?
I'll come back here anyway. We'll have another round of this.
Yeah, oh, well, we're not done. You know, so you just keep hammering. Hold on a second. I want to talk to you. But I tell you, you know, I can see where this is going, and it's not good. But we can separate our minds from it. Okay. That's one thing, Stephen. I'm telling you, man. There's something else. And I guarantee freaking you that, you know, they, them, those on both sides and all sides and everything at least know, suspect, or are part of it. You know, if it gives they, them, those more street cred and they got a direct line too, do you think, you know, the administration, Obama and whoever his puppet leader is, you know, isn't talking with Putin on a regular kind of, this is what we're going to do and we're going to do this and you do this and don't do that and we promise and pinky swear we'll whatever. All the rest of it's just bullshit. We are just being bullshitted. The public is just being manipulated in. We think it's not orchestrated. When you're dealing with thermonuclear weapons, guess what? It's orchestrated.
Well, it's very dangerous stuff. I mean, talk about playing with fire, Ernie. I mean, there's no greater example of playing with fire than playing with nuclear weapons on the possibility that they literally could be used. I mean, that really just shocks the hell out of me. Did you ever see the movie On the Beach?
The old
Gregory
one?
Peck. Gregory Peck.
Yeah, Ava the old black and white back
black
in the
and
day.
Black and white film, 1950s vintage. Gregory Peck, Ava Gardner, and Fred Astaire playing a deadly serious role, and at the end, he commits suicide. That's how serious a role he played. It was about the end of the world. The end of the world. Nuclear war, the end of the world. There's no place to hide.
You mean you in real life he committed suicide?
I'm sorry?
In real life he committed suicide?
Oh, no, in the movie.
Okay.
In the movie, he committed suicide. All right. But, you know, Fred Astaire, song and dance man.
Yeah.
In the movie, I mean, he played a serious role, and he committed suicide. And that was the script of the movie. It's a 1950s film. If you ever get a chance to see it, absolutely do. I'm not a big film fan, but I saw it in the 50s, and I had a chance to see it once on late-night television.
See,
it doesn't show up very often.
This is what I think is going to – I know which movie you're talking about. I think I can see what's happening. It is building up. There will be a mushroom cloud. It's been too long since we had one for the fear of it to be legitimate in the minds of people. And they're not paying attention. There's not enough CNN watchers. There's not enough. I mean, you know, Piers Morgan, you know, loses his job and nobody even cares to comment about it. I mean, you know, it's like nobody, you know, nobody cares. So they're going, oh, you know, we got to have, you know, a missile going down a chimney. We got to have a strike. We got to have a shock and awe. We got to, you know what? We're just going to do the mushroom cloud thing. Just, you know, just for grins and giggles. And who are we going to sacrifice? Oh, we'll take out 1 million, 3 million over here, there, and so on. And then we got, you know, a mushroom cloud to talk about for another decade. And it'll be just like 9/11 towers coming. 9/11, 9/11, 9/11, 9/11. They're going to have to try and, if they can't provoke this, you know, then they'll just do it. And they already have, you know, people who are saying that they were going to detonate one in the Carolinas, and then the military didn't play, and then they get rid of all these generals. There's something going on. This is, they don't have a credible, legitimate, people scared threat of the government's ouch, quit it, and they're just going ahead and starting trading Bitcoin with each other at a, you know, 13-year-olds in Tehran, you know, and Crimea and Ukraine and Russia and Israel and everything, and the next generation are just, bite me, we're just, you know, trading widgets for Bitcoin and we don't need you anymore, and they have to have some kind of a credible, you need us. And I'm going, look, if you didn't cause it, you didn't prevent the mushroom cloud. So fuck you, okay? I am like, this whole thing, there is no government solution to this. Government is the problem, Stephen. This is exactly what we talk about. This, right here. And it's all going to be, oh, well, they and them, that, and you keep saying America. No, it's not America. It's the United States government. That's two totally different things. We are under occupation, just like they are.
I use the terms Washington and America interchangeably, but we agree. I'm talking about the government, and I absolutely agree with you. The people in Washington supposedly representing us indeed are the problem, and I absolutely oppose them 100%, Ernie.
Just want to have another group. It might as well just be the neo-Nazi guys come in. It doesn't matter who's there.
I believe in direct democracy. I believe that people should have a right to express their views, and what people want is what government should be doing for them. So I love the idea of national referenda, where people can say what they want, and I think the people that they send to positions in government, they are responsible to the people they represent.
And you're guaranteed to have this happen. Guaranteed, Stephen. Guaranteed. I want democracy down to the individual. I don't want to get to have a say, you know, in what you get, how you get to rule me. I get to have a freaking definitive sovereign declaration. I get to rule my freaking self. Bite me, you know.
Well, we need to. We kind of have everybody going off in their own direction.
Why not?
Because what you want may absolutely do harm to me, or vice versa. So we need to have laws so people don't go around shooting people
like they're doing now. I mean, nothing you're going to say is going to, you're going to have any example that doesn't come down to thermonuclear war. You know,
well,
you're
I'm talking about what goes on at home, just talking domestically for a minute. You got to have laws. You can't allow robberies to go along.
So do I got to have federal law? I mean, here we have legal. I will give you a perfect example. We have legalization of marijuana, and they can't go to the bank because a threat of federal seizure of assets. You know, why? Why? So the states aren't in charge. They're not. We've got to have laws.
I believe the state should have a lot to say about things.
A lot to say. Not everything to say. The people aren't, you know, depending on, you know, them to protect them from some tyrannical we rule you thing. You know, it might as well be just, you know, Colorado be Crimea. Say, you know what? I break with thee and we align with nobody. You know, there is a county in Northern California that's voting in May for secession from everybody to be their own republic. A guy got it on the ballot. So, you know, here you're going to have Jackson County in Northern California. You know what? We vote. We're independent now. Now what? Are we going to recognize that? Or they're not allowed? You're going to invade them? What are you going to do?
Well, we have a hell of a mess on our hands.
Yeah. It's real simple. It is governments. And everybody keeps this idea, this most dangerous superstition, Larkin Rose would put it, is this concept that, well, you have to have... No, you ain't got to have shit, Stephen. This is our argument you and I have had for years, is that everything that you're advocating, trying how to be ruled and so on, results in thermonuclear war every time. I can see it coming. And because they have to maintain the fear so that it can justification of the state. You know,
Ernie, I agree with you, and I can put it this way. Several times in articles... An article I wrote, maybe a month or so ago, was the most recent time. I have quoted renowned world experts, great thinkers, a hell of a lot smarter than I could ever hope to be, saying that the possibility of a nuclear confrontation at some point in the future is a guaranteed certainty. A guaranteed certainty. And what they're talking about are the crazies sitting in Washington and maybe some other places that are literally the driving cause of literally at some point we're going to come to this. And if it happens, Ernie, it means curtains for all of us.
Well, let's quit giving them legitimacy. You know, this is the discussion, you know, we should have. You want to do another couple of segments or you got to go?
I got to go.
All right, I got to go. Here's the show starting. Thanks, Stephen. We'll get back together.
Okay, Ernie. We'll talk soon.
All right. Bye.
Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
back to Declare Your Independence. Stephen and I had a discussion between the hours and so on. He had to go, but, you know, I'd love to. All right, let me tell you what's going on. Stephen Lindman is a progressive. I mean, you know, and, you know, I would say in the kinder, gentler term, of if you can be. I mean, it's still, you know, we need to have a government to beat us over the head because we deserve it or something. You know, Stephen, I love the man. He's a good soul. But I tell you this. Yeah, but you got to have laws. You got to have this. You got to have that. America this, America that. We're starting to see the separation in the minds of the people. And you can see it all over the internet and kind of, you know, on Freedom's Phoenix. And it's just kind of a trend that was just a natural evolution of the perception that we have of the American government. You'll see it when they refer to the USG. You know, it's like a psyop. You got Republicans out there. Anything they don't like, what do they start saying? USA, USA, USA. Well, what do the freedom-oriented people say? USG, USG. The United States government is not the USA. It's not us. There's a separate. We are under occupation. This mindset, it rings true. It's like, oh, you know, thank you, Ernie, for saying it. I mean, I get comments whenever months ago, years ago, I go, hey, man, we're under occupation. Oh, thank you. Somebody said it. Oh, my goodness. That's kind of, you know, that's exactly what it's, you know, I didn't think of it. Anything out, we can understand. We're occupied. By whom? What? You know, what are we occupied? It's a sickness. It's a perspective. It's a mindset. There will be a mushroom cloud. They want you to think about it. They want you to worry about it. They want you to expect it. There's, you know, they it's been too long. Man, it's been 50 years, and, you know, let's get with the program. You know, every so on, we got to have us a mushroom cloud. Yep, told you there was going to be a mushroom cloud. You know, that kind of, you know, and I don't care. You know, really, that's not what's going to, you know, of course I care if there's a mushroom cloud. But my comment is that, you know, I'm not going to have that as a concern. It is not going to dictate what I do, say, live, and plan for. This threat, they want you, fear is the mind killer. They want you, and something's changed. We don't care. I mean, you look, do me a favor, Donna. Go ahead and do a search on ratings for cable news networks. You know, like CNN, Fox, just put, let's see, news channels. Just go ratings, news channels. And I bet you there's a story or something that comes up there. And we'll put it into the, we'll just take a look and see what you come up with and come talk about it. Because I can see, you know, oh my goodness. War with Russia imminent. McCain, why aren't we at war already? Bomb, 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 Iran while we're at it. Okay? You have Israel right now in Freedom's Phoenix. I get all this stuff. I can sit here and immerse myself in this crap. You know, we have the writers and staff putting this up. A lot of these are stories. I go, wow, that I would want to know more about that, maybe. You know, that's a good headline there. Oh, so-and-so, I know this guy. Yeah, I'd probably should put that up. Yeah, I just take the links and I send them to Ecuador and they put them up. And I don't read them. A lot of stuff on Ukraine, I'm like, you know what? I'm more interested in SpaceX's launch. I'm more interested in the satellite communication or whatever. I'm more interested in the decentralized off-grid, made safe kind of whatever stuff I'm working with. I'm more interested in, you know, all this other stuff that's going to be there after whatever the hell they're doing. Because, you know, when they go, oh, the Roman Empire fell. I don't know, did it? You know, what they thought, the people, you know, the United States government fell. You know, did the people fail? I don't know. Was there some of the guys that were pulling the strings that they wound up, all their minions got their heads chopped off and stabbed and done and dead? You know, but, you know, the bankers, you know, the guys that were shaving the coins, how'd they do it? Where'd they go? You know, where'd they light? You know, they're on some island somewhere. You know, they found this. They created that. They went to their Atlantis kind of whatever submarine or something. I mean, how the hell do we know? You know, you can look back and the families survive. How did the, you know, they, them, those of the, you know, secret handshake people, how'd they do during World War One, World War Two, and going into, you know, they want, or if they need, they'll make three. You know, all I'm thinking about, you know, is Bitcoin to the moon. See, right there. Bitcoin to the moon. You know, I mean, a whole nother thing. What do we have? SpaceX is readying their first Falcon Heavy for Mars. Get a lot of news about that, do you? You know, I am, and they're going after Tesla. There's write this down, guys. You guys, you'll get a lot out of this. Tucker, the movie. After World War II, a guy named Tucker, played by Jeff Bridges, you know, there's a bunch of stars in this thing. It was a big movie. Tucker created an automobile that was faster, better, safer, more reliable, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then Big Three in Detroit and Washington said, hell no. And the whole story is about what they did to crush him and how hard they had and how deceitful they had to be and how much they used me and how they. It's different now. Elon Musk, the Tesla, you know, it's obvious he has a superior automobile. It's changed the entire industry. Within 2-3 years, it's going to be, your car's not a hybrid? You know, your car's not electric? Your car's not, I mean, he's going, yeah, I need fuel stations? Oh, that's fine. I'll just do it myself. Oh, by the way, you know, I'm in with Solar City. We got all the solar we ever need. We got all the technology. We're good. You know, I saw him down at Lowe's or something here recently, Solar City in there selling systems for your home. So, and I think they do kind of a lease thing and so on. That wouldn't be my first preference, but that's a business model making them some money. They're making the money. So I'm going, all right. He has a car. He has a space thing. You know, and it's all just to stop him. And why were we screaming? Why were we at Spaceship One, Government Zero, the first launch, a civilian there with those signs? And I made a big point of us going into the billionaire party with them in the hangar there at Scaled Composites, where Bert Rutan's shop was, and stand there for hours holding up those 2x4 signs and switch out and get another one. We're going to space. Government's not invited. Can't hear the government scream in space. The final frontier brought to you by Free Enterprise. You know, government is lost in space. Government bad, freedom good. Why? Because there were some people in there, you know, they made it very clear, only in America, America, we do America. I go, yeah, bullshit. Ooh, did I say that out loud? Sorry. I'm going, this is not what's going on. What's going on is that America will put a lid on. You're not allowed. I've been doing shows up until this launch and everything, talking to people. And now it's all, when I talk to them, they're going, oh, but if you're a U.S. citizen, you're not allowed to take the launch pad on seasteading in the barge out in the middle of the Pacific and doing it because you're our livestock. I mean, I had people saying this. I'm going, wow. That's how you see it? That's how you see it? Government, the most dangerous superstition. It is essential that we get this out and be part of the lexicon, the part of the discussion, part of the most dangerous superstition. Larkin Rowe is out there doing what he's doing. Josie the Outlaw, his book, Authoritarian Sociopathy. Here I come using these tools. Watch.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
You know, this is one thing I want to look at right away here. You know, you look at Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, blah, 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 TV by the numbers, you know, zaptoit.com. This is, you know, just a ratings thing you look at. The way I read this, it's going, okay, P2+, that means anybody over 2 years old. I mean, we're, you know, if you're fogging a mirror, you know, even if it's laying on the carpet, you know, it's you're counted. All right. So the total day is this is what, Friday. The total day for Fox, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, you know, Fox Business Network, Headline News, blah, 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 all of it. 3 million people. Okay. I'm going, okay, so 3 million, you know, during the day. Okay, all right, let's go to primetime. You know, we get, you know, Fox News, ooh, primetime, they got, you know, 2.1 million. CNN's got, you know, 900-something thousand. It goes down, you know, blah, blah. So it looks like Fox is like twice the audience, okay? So it's about as much as all the others combined. So they, you know, they got, you know, that going on. But what are we looking at? A couple million people. Out of 300-something million people. I don't give a crap what these guys say. You know, but it doesn't matter. They'll quote, you know, it's kind of, we saw this. I saw, you know, here we got, you know, Israeli minister. Israel can't rely on U.S. on Iran. Good. I mean, I don't care. You know, this. I'm sorry. You know, I'm worried about whether you rely on us or not. You know, I just, there's a generational shift, and it's so obvious what's happening. They don't care. Who's they? I mean, the people, you know, me, you. You know, what team are we rooting for? Let's root for, freedom. You know, let's root for leave me aloneism. Let's root for, have the capability to trade Bitcoin for widgets of somebody, the Ukrainian freaking Russian doll thing I like, okay, on eBay. You know, it's here, and they're losing control. They have to have some kind of control. Where? Federal Express? UPS? DHL? I mean, is it going to come down ship simply, you know, whoever's doing the shipping? Is it Amazon with cloud services, the CIA? I don't know how you're going to get out of that one. You know, I mean, once you sucked up to the man at that level doing that, I don't want to do this anymore. Yeah, we'll see how that works out. You know, so I'm just going, and is there an agency or a department that's defending us? Is there some, you know, individual with his own little shadow, whatever the heck, that's kind of, you know, we're here to save America, Captain America, Avengers? Is there an Avenger initiative somewhere? Is there something, you know, and Captain America was used in comic books and cartoons and everything to support the United States government's wars for decades. Spider-Man, Marvel Comics, you know, or was he DC? Whatever, doesn't matter. You know, Spider-Man was used to do what? You know, they had a coloring book about, 6-7 years ago that it was for the United Nations to convince children who the good guys, bad guys were, whatever, when Spider-Man was popular. United Nations, Marvel Comics, United Nations, Marvel Comics, United Nations. Seriously? And then here comes all the Avenger stuff. And I'm going, a movie's getting made. Hundreds of millions. Yeah, ooh, America! And what are we building up to? Captain America! Captain America's getting up, and he's kind of cute and kind of new and big chip. Captain, he's a little guy, became big guy, Captain America. There was a radio talk show host in Florida, and he was Captain America, okay? And I remember having him on, and he was proud being American, or at least he got to go in to the surveillance offices and some of the military. They let him come in because he's American, okay? He's promoting. He even had his show broadcast on, what was the Army Network, you know, to the troops around the world. He had his show, Captain America. I mean, seriously, it was that obvious. So I'm going, I had him on. I mean, let's have a conversation. It's interesting. You look it up. Ernest Hancock, Captain America, you know, a couple times. Came back. Couldn't believe it. Hey, let's get him on again. See if he'll do it one more time. Yeah, he did. Oh, man, these guys. You know, these guys. So you can understand from my perspective, do I need to understand all of what's going on around the world? I do. It's they, them, those won't let people alone because it benefits them. I mean, you know, they go, oh, you need to know the details. You need to know the names. You need to know what the office is and his history and how and this guy and did and shook hands with and picture of and the kind of the secret handshake of the overlapping Bilderberg meeting where everybody came and did in their G20, whatever. Who gives a crap? It's just supporting evidence of what I already know. It is we have become victims of the most dangerous superstition, the idea that we even need this government. And talking to Stephen Lindman, this is the exact conversation. And one of the reasons why I like Stephen on the show, and we have this conversation. Well, you have to have. Why? You're guaranteeing, you know, sooner or later, thermonuclear war with this superstition that you keep supporting. How do you think that happens? Ouch, quit it, ouch, quit it, ouch, quit it. Yamamoto, you know, no, we don't invade the United States. That'd be bad. There'd be a rifle behind every blade of grass. Damn Skippy. So what's the United States government want? Do they just want to get out a mower and just mow us all over? You know, expose her and you're not allowed. You're on a list. There's something else going on. There's something else. What is it? Oh, I need complete global hegemonic domination of, you know, Dr. Evil. I mean, you know, you know, but there's something else. There's something behind him. There's, you know, it's like watching the Men in Black and the big bug cockroaches going up to take off. And they're going, millions of Legos. Good. More food for my family. War. I feed off of war. Is it that simple? Do they say, hey, we got to get rid of a lot of those breeders and, you know, freaking eaters anyway. We need some more cannon fodder for the, you know, the mill here. You know, I mean, we got to get, you know, some, you know, we just got to, you know, start grinding up some meat. Now we need a new why they need us. That's their mentality. You know, I talked last week about, you know, where my understanding of this comes from. It was my father was a very authoritarian, dictatorial, small in here kind of, you know, and I, you know, sometime in the future we'll share more about that. But, you know, it's it was very clear to me he was involved in, you know, small town local politics. You know, later he's always kind of gravitated towards politics, towards getting a shiny badge. And he was bolsterous and you know, had that confidence kind of whether he was right or wrong. It didn't matter. He just, you know, just didn't have really the competence, but he had the confidence. And it was just, duh, 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 and it was constant. And a lot of people like that, they just kind of leave, or, hey, you want to be in charge, knock yourself out, you want to wear the shiny badge, you want to, you know what? And he was made a deputy sheriff at one time because he knew the guys and so on, and this was before we moved in Florida. And, you know, in a small county, there are 67 counties in Florida. And for you to be a deputy sheriff with a shiny badge and a gun, you know, you're just like, damn. Now, damn. I knew that this man, damn. I didn't want to be stopped by, damn. So whenever I look at government, these ideas and everything, I understand the personality types that gravitate, that what the minimum job requirement is for being in those positions. And I'm just, and that's what scares me. It's not them. You're not going to change them. It's us. Quit begging for these positions to be filled.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix,
Ernest Hancock.
And we're back. Okay, this is what happened. I just talked to Charles Goyette. He's going to be, you know, setting up, talking to Ron, doing some Ron Paul Channel America stuff. And I'm going to call in all the goodies. Go ahead, call Jeff Deist over at Mises Institute right now. See if he won. See if he's got somebody to suggest or him coming on talking about Ukraine. And then, you know, another point of, you know, doing, doing on Ron. I'm... You know, Dr. Paul, there's really no reason for, we're going to talk about voting. I just don't care. I mean, that's, we were never on the same page of, you know, the United States government and people and so on, but we had the same philosophy. I really respect Dr. Paul in being able to emphasize voluntarism while running for president. I mean, you know, you got skills doing that. So I don't put a lot of effort into kind of, you know, yeah, if he wants to talk about, yeah, you know, we never really, you know, did, okay, it's time for Ron. When we're going into thermonuclear war, you know, I'm going to be a butthead about it, you know, ding, 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 ding. I mean, of course, everybody and their grandma wants to talk to Dr. Paul, you know, I know that. It'll be very kind of him to come on. But, you know, now, I'm calling in the chip, man. This is it, right? Now. I need to have it under, who's going to tell me? Chalmers Johnson's gone. He would be one of the first guys to go to. I am, you know, Philip Giraldi. Yeah, go and make that name too. This is Lou Rockwell. Let's get Lou on. You know, call it. You made me look. It's all going to come down to the same thing. It's us. I'm not going to. What am I going to do? Pick some. You know, this is, you know, a bad guy du jour. It's this guy, it's this administration, it's this government, it's them, you know, it's the fact that you even looked. And everything that I'm going to be talking about, and these guys may not want to talk about it. I'm going, you know, all the more reason for me to break with thee. You know, this county in Northern California, he gets some kind of a secession thing going on. I don't know, is that the first place the mushroom cloud's going to hit? Or the last? I don't know. If it's the first, it'll be from... United States government. So this is, I don't like immersing you. Once you get me, man, I'm going to get my answer. I'm going to get my freaking answer because I asked the question. Why? Nobody ever asked why. Oh, well, they're because this guy, yeah. Why? Well, because they want complete domination of the, why? Oh, because they, I don't know why, because they're crazy. Because they're not crazy. They're evil. You know, that's a whole other thing. Sociopathic kind of, you know, I understand this mindset. I lived with it. It is a very narcissistic, selfish, self-centered justification for doing any and everything kind of, man, it's good. I'm putting the full court. Let all be known that I want to talk. I don't care about, you know, presidential politics or the midterm election. I seriously. You bring that up, and it's just going to piss me off. I don't even want to talk about it. I want to talk about geopolitics and Ukraine, Crimea, what the hell these guys are doing, the economics of this whole situation, Europe. That's what I want to talk. That's, you know, why? Who would be a good person to ask? Ron Paul? So, I mean, how's the question formulated when he's on one of these other programs? It's going to be... Well, do you think the government, the military should this and that? You know what I think? Do you think the American people should divorce themselves in their head from government in general? And this is exactly why. Because no matter what you do, well, you got to have. Yep, and you're just guaranteed thermonuclear war. Sooner or later, here we go. Mushroom clouds. Look, a mushroom cloud. Are you feared enough? No. Oh, that's a post-mushroom cloud world. You feel it? Oh, that's a post 9/11 world. That's a post mushroom cloud world. I can already see the rhetoric coming. There will be a mushroom cloud if they need it. And you know, major look, pay attention. And what we need to be ready with right off the bat is Lysander Spooner thing. You know, hey, if it didn't cause it, the government didn't cause this, they didn't prevent it. I am just so sick of this. I'm, you know, the most dangerous superstition. I, you know, feel this come. This has been my act of going. We, Yeah, we're going to be doing a release of the new front panel. I mean, it kind of gets crowded up at the top. We've been doing this intentionally. There's a whole other thing coming another week or two that we'll be unveiling the new Freedoms Phoenix with all the goodies that we've been working on forever. We finally got a market. We finally got the fundies in. We finally got, you know, a lot of stuff that we're doing, and we're going to reformat it so it's, you know, you don't have to scroll down so far. You start getting into the news. It'll be more on the left, and now we're redesigning it. But the thing is that I'm going, okay, we need to get up. I'm all this is in preparation for the next Levolution push. You know, that'll be something else, whatever. You know, it's always something. You know, we had many projects before and many since. There's a lot of things when I want to have a big, giant national. I get to have my say and you get to say, you know, we say. And that's, yeah, well, you're not in the, often getting elected, kind of near confusing me with someone that gives a crap. Okay. Where is their greatest threat to they, them, those, is that we don't care. Next, we're over here. Squirrel, you know, I'm Bitcoin, distributed internet, global answers, translators, Generation Next don't give a crap what's not on your system. You're not even able to tax them. You're not even able, you don't even know where they are. I mean, you know, it's kind of, you know, I can see it coming. Are we preparing for that? Yesterday, I had I called Michael W. Dean. I had they're doing the Meow Bit. You know, he was pushing the free speech me, and then they kind of, you know, did a universal translator instead of it just working on Firefox. Now it works on a bunch of other browsers, and they call it Meow Bit, and it's just a small piece of code. And they kind of went off on their own. Did they offered it to the other guys? They weren't interested. Okay, fine, and we'll just do it ourselves and open source. And bite me. We're done. But Michael W. Dean, Meow Bit, when we were at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, that was, you know, by that time the controversy had gotten up to where it's a thing. And, you know, here we have this ability to do the .bit sites, and they can't shut it down and distribute it internet, and my servers are, and you can't find them. Okay? So I'm going, all right. So when they want to shut down, this gets all thermonuclear, and they start coming. Now we got to shut down things like Daily Paul and Freedom's Phoenix and Lou Rockwell and whatever the heck they can get to. You know, I'm going, oh, okay. Well, we're over here now. Sucks to be you. We'll just take out the entire internet. Oh, okay. Well, we're going to CubeSats. Bite me. Okay. So then we have out of Scotland, the gentleman that I talked to yesterday, and I said, Michael W. Dean needs a technical white paper. He goes, it's all over the place. Right there, 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 there. Here's the links. So I sent that to Michael W. Dean. I go, this is what you need. Here it is. Go. So he's evaluating this. If we have the ability to do the Napster kind of thing of going on to your LimeWire, whatever you want to call it, the peer-to-peer distributed internet is the people. Now, it's our computers. We do this the way that we do, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff with the BitTorrent kind of, you know, blah, blah, that geeky stuff. I understand the philosophy behind it. It's the encryption behind it. It's the peer-to-peer behind it. It's the Austrian economics behind it. It is the concept of freedom behind it. Behind it. That is what I support. Not the Bitcoin, blah, 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 blah. I need to get my wallets all straight and password and everything. I probably need to get more organized and how I can get a new wallet and whatever. And, you know, if I want to get all serious about it and change my QR codes and getting kind of whatever. Because I got early versions of stuff that's still charging me 0.005 Bitcoin to make a transaction. So I got to pay $3, you know, to go spend two. And I'm going, you know, no. Now, so we're, you know, working on that. So I'm going to go ahead and spend some time on that. I'll probably get another computer. You know, this freaking thing is, you know, kick, you know, where is the love? The, you know, this, I still run XP on this thing. Heck, it had Vista I stripped off when I got this a few years ago. This was my traveling computer during the Levolution. So the man's already got it all nice and tuned up for them, but it's becoming worthless for me. You want to be on my shoulder, NSA? You want to watch everything I'm doing? Well, make sure I get to do whatever I want. I'll let you watch. I'm going to send it to you anyway. You know, so it said, I'm in a different position than you guys. I'm open kind of, yep, and I talk to this guy. There's nothing that I do that doesn't come out on this microphone anyway. So here's an open call to Ron Paul. It's time to talk Ukraine, geopolitics, Crimea, Russian Cold War, warm war. I, you know, there is something going on, and I need your perspective, Dr. Paul. It's time. I'm calling in the chip, man. Let's do it. Because I don't care about this other stuff, but this, man, the most dangerous superstition, it's hurting us.
NeowBit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. NeowBit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address in our free software, NeowBit. Go to meowbit.com. That's meowbit.com.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
I don't feel like any music. I'm just, made me look. So I got to, you know, let's do it. All right, I'm pulling out all the phone numbers and all the past and the emails and people I know that knew and then and kind of everything, and I'm going to do my best to get, you know, Ron on record on this because I need to understand. You know, it is what the entire planet is focusing towards. If you have, I mean, it's always, what you know, the First World War was just built up around, we, you know, haven't had one, you know, recent enough, and here we got an excuse and, you know, some assassination of some little potentate in the middle of who gives a crap, and all of a sudden you're in the World War. You know, just going to realign everything and make sure, you know, a bunch of that money gets over here. And then what happened? It was the most dangerous thing that could happen is where the people that want the war profited no matter who won. Think about it. War is very profitable to the people that fund the wars. What do? Especially when you don't have any money. Okay, you got nothing to lose. You're ready to kick butt. Let's go and get the only way we're going to and whatever and stay in charge and cuss. And so what do? What made the Rothschilds and these guys so wealthy was that they lent money to both sides under the condition that whichever side won paid the debt of the other side. What? They go, yeah, we'll lend you money. You know, and if you beat them, you got to pay their debt. You know, well, we're not going to be out. We're going to get, you know, we're both sides. Yeah. And you want it or not? Wow, how sick is that? And then you have some guy going, yep, gimme, like they, you know, they didn't have a choice. Last night, you know, I've been watching Breaking Bad. I'm like in the middle of season two, so everybody get off my butt. You know, I'm watching, you know, yeah, whatever. You know, I got to cleanse myself. I don't like having like negative waves, you know, in my life doing that. It's entertaining. It's informative. You learn a lot about the criminal element of and just all the more reason why I want to avoid it. But I'm going, okay, so I'm watching that, but I got to clean my mind every now and then. So I got on my Netflix channel, I got the old Star Trek. Yeah, I've just put in another one. The episode last night was one where Kirk had been like 15 years before he did a planetary survey, and he was kind of, you know, in the, and he made friends with this one guy that for whatever reason he told him who he really was and where they came from and, you know, keep a secret. Okay, he gets there and he gets attacked by Abominable Snowman or something, and this guy's, you know, witch doctor wife has to heal him, and she's trying to convince him, and she finds out and tells her for the price of saving him that he's from the stars, and he's got all kinds of the big-ass weapons, we're going to whip butt, and let's go take on the townspeople. Because what was happening is the Klingons came, and this planet that was, you know, just supposed to be left alone, peaceful, develop on its own, leave it alone. They go to the villagers and they say, here's some flintlocks. Now go kick the crap out of the hill, people, and then you'll be in charge. You know, and then it'll get up to the point all of a sudden, you know, within 100 years they got phasers and you know, whatever, and the Klingons rule, who cares? So the dilemma was at the time, you know, we got Vietnam going on. You know, the domino theory. Everybody, you know, if we have the bad guys are arming these guys, and then they take over these guys, and pretty soon they'll, you know, the dominoes will fall, and the Soviet Union and China and communism will take over the planet. So he's like, we got to keep parity. Kirk is making this argument. We must make sure then they get flintlocks. Well, then what happens? You know, and Bones is like, well, what happens when they get phasers? It must be kept even. Because their mindset, the argument that they were making, is even if there is continued war, at least there's two sides. If one side is supported over the other, well, then you just eliminated the other side, and only one side prevails. One side of what? See, they keep thinking in terms of collectives, of government, of, you know, flags.
Got a flag?
You know, it's in terms of, oh, one flag will prevail, and then the other guy, they won't have their flag anymore. I am of the opinion that, you know, whatever. I mean, there was other episodes where you had, you know, that I haven't got to that one yet. I remember this one, they were kind of advanced beings, you know, so they didn't care anyway. They'd come in and they'd take, oh, okay, yeah, we're, you know, whatever, we're not resisting. But we're going to take, oh, it's yours now. Yeah, take it, whatever, we don't care. Because they lived in another plane of existence, whatever, they were just physical manifestations to make them feel more comfortable, and you want to rule our, you know, corporeal body when, I mean, our physical body when we're out over here anyway, it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, these concepts have been discussed for decades. A lot of times in science fiction or in novels. And the concept is that I can see what the real danger is. It's us. We keep worrying about, you know, who's the guy that says they're in charge. You need to create systems that it doesn't matter. Quit being dependent on their roads. Quit being dependent on their taxing policy. Quit being dependent on their money. Quit being dependent on their energy system. Quit being dependent on everything that they want you to be dependent on. They got a law for it. Go outside of it, around it, over it, under it. Ignore it. You know, it's local community kind of, you know, you got the hippie commune, progressive kind of whatever. They at least understand that or get it. But then all of a sudden, then you have these different groups, and we're going to be meeting a lot of them this weekend, have a party, you know, Friday night, a lot of the progressives and the, you know, Birkenstock wearing permaculture and tree planting, whatever, all of a sudden finds out how much they got in common with the oath-keeping, Tea Party and Patriot Right, kind of, you know, they got the same problem and the same solutions. And they'll start trading with each other. And then here come the man going, nope, nope, nope. Got to put a line right here. There's, you're on this side. You're on this side. Don't you remember? Didn't we tell you? Then you get the memo. Well, people are not buying that anymore. They're not. And this is why I don't have, you know, people in politics, you know, even Dr. Paul on, or anyone want to argue over which side's going to win, ours indeed, kind of, and who and how we're going to get ruled and everything. I don't care. You know, I don't. But now, it's time to talk. I need to understand from someone that's been there, that has under, who else is going to explain to us what the hell is really going on the world politic and whatever. The IMF and the World Bank standing there coming up, you know, boing, here we are. You know, sign here, it's done. With the backing of. I don't know what they think KGB, Putin, would, I mean, I'm thinking that it was already pre-planned. You don't go in the big stakes like this, you know, and risk thermonuclear war on that unless you want it. Now, either they're doinking it, doing it, or there was already a carving up deal concession you get to sell, look good, kind of, we're going to do something. I mean, this is orchestrated, planned out over time. And if they didn't do that, then they're even stupider than I thought. All the more reason to ignore them. You know, there was the book, it was called Unintended Consequences by John Ross, and it was real popular in the mid-90s, and it was, you know, kind of how the people kind of revolted against the government and so on. And it got to the point to where, you know, just individual people, it just started, you know, and they started taking out the closest agent that was giving you a hard time and destroying your business and your life of the whatever, and people just started dying. Well, it got to the point to where you have government agencies, they're going, hey, man. You know, we're not part of them, or individuals, oh, I left, I quit, or women that would divorce their DEA husbands say, hey, I divorced this guy, don't put me on the list. Hey, I'm not part of the, you know, so you can see the mentality. I see this coming, and that's why they, them, those were so scared by that book, is because a lot of us saw that was the most likely scenario, that people were just going to start, we don't care, we don't respect your authority. We don't respect authority other than our own over our own bodies, you know, that kind of transition. Until we get to that, where we can start doing that and start somebody advocating for that and asking why we're not doing that already and getting rid of this most dangerous superstition, humanity will not evolve past whatever this crap caveman we got beat you over the head with a big boy, little boy, you know, thermonuclear, whatever the hell. You know, it's always that threat. There's always that bully. There's always that authoritarian figure there because we created them. We gave him stripes. We gave him, you know, nice little cards to wear on his shoulder. Put all the salad on his chest. We gave, you know, a hat. You know, fine hat. It's always a hat. You know, and then if that gets kind of old, well, then it's in a t-shirt and jeans. And it's kind of, hey, I'm a cool, you know, kick your butt leader. You know, the propping up of Lech Walesa in Poland was just a really good example. I remember thinking back, I'm going, why? He's going to leave the country? What? You know, it's to give credibility to the concept of government. The fact that they would have none or small states go in or something. A lot of these lines on the map, you know, hell, in my lifetime, they've been freaking unrecognizably different. So I'm just, this is not, it, to think that the United States wouldn't break up. You know, it's a secession to this. Heck, I got a little county doing. So I'm just going, I'm going to be a butthead about this. They made me get up off my couch. Yeah, and it's for my children, for you, the responsibility of me. I hate it. But we're going to find out why. Who do I got to ask? Alex Jones? You know, maybe. Yeah, put it out to Alex Jones. See if Alex come on. You know what? We're due for that too. What the hell? You know, we're gonna find out. But what's the answer? Ignore him.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
Radio VR.
Good morning and welcome to Radio VR. We're broadcasting live from Washington, D.C. and around the world on voiceofrussia.com/US. I'm Kate Zickel.
And I'm Rick Young. Today is Tuesday, March 18th, 2014.
Radio VR News.
A Navy warship that has been helping search for the missing Malaysian jetliner is dropping out of the hunt. Correspondent Ross Simpson tells us why.
The Navy's 7th Fleet has determined that long-range naval aircraft are a more efficient means of looking for the plane or its debris now that the search area has broadened into the southern Indian Ocean. P-3 and P-8 surveillance aircraft remain involved in the search, but the USS Kidd, an Arleigh Burke-class destroyer that has been searching the waters of the Indian Ocean with its helicopters, will return to its normal duties. Ross Simpson, Washington.
President Barack Obama is hosting a rare ceremony to present the nation's highest military honor to 24 veterans. National security correspondent Sagar Magani reports on why and who will receive the awards.
The 24 men will receive the Medal of Honor for service in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam after a congressionally mandated review to ensure the most eligible recipients had not been bypassed due to prejudice. Most of the 24 are of either Hispanic or Jewish heritage. Only 3 are still living, including Melvin Morris, who will be awarded the Medal of Honor for a courageous action in Vietnam. Morris is black and says it never occurred to him that his race might have prevented him from receiving the medal earlier. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The White House says a milestone has been reached in getting people to enroll in health insurance plans under the Affordable Care Act. Correspondent Tim McGuire explains.
More than 5 million. That's what the Obama administration says is the number of people who have signed up for the private health insurance under the new health care law. That still leaves a million needed to meet the already lowered goal of 6 million by the end of this month. That comes out to 70,000 people a day, a rate that analysts say will be a stretch to meet. While the deadline remains fixed, it's still not clear if the White House will grant a grace period to people who started but did not finish the enrollment process. Tim McGuire, Washington.
Prosecutors are asking a federal judge to keep testimony from the mastermind of 9/11 out of the trial of Osama bin Laden's son-in-law. Correspondent Warren Levinson has the latest.
As defense lawyers began their case on behalf of Suleiman Abu Ghaith, the one-time al-Qaeda spokesman, they filed a 14-page statement from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed in response to questions they sent him at Guantanamo Bay. They're asking the judge to allow them to call Mohammed as a witness. The prosecution wants all statements from the self-described 9/11 mastermind kept out of the trial. In the statement, he says Abu Ghaith was valuable to al-Qaeda as a communicator. There are videotapes of him promising the storm of airplanes will not abate, but that he had no operational knowledge of the terrorist group's attack plans. Warren Levinson, New York.
Former officials who have investigated the CIA in the past want the agency investigated again. Correspondent Carlotta Bradley has the details.
The chief counsel and former staffers of a 1975 Senate committee that investigated CIA abuses are asking Congress and President Obama to form a special panel to investigate missteps by the country's spy agencies. In a letter to Congress, the president, and the public, they urge Congress to examine the operations of the CIA and National Security Agency and their impact on civil liberties. They also question the effectiveness of recent intelligence reviews by the Obama administration and Senate. Carlotta Bradley, Washington.
It was all about the green, but the voices of gay protests grew louder at this year's St. Patrick's Day parade in New York.
Irish lesbians and gays have been protesting their exclusion from New York's St. Patrick's Day parade for decades. This year, they are energized by the refusal of the new mayor, Bill de Blasio, to take part, and the withdrawal of a couple of beer sponsors. Protester Brendan Fay says we live in a new moment.
Pope Francis has opened his arms to LGBT persons. I think it's time the Fifth Avenue parade open up the doors.
The parade had fewer spectators than usual, but that could just as easily have been a function of the sub-freezing weather. Warren Levinson, New York.
And that's the news for Radio VR in Washington. I'm Kate Zickel.
And I'm Rick Young.
All right. Maybe I'll clear up. All right. Go ahead and give me the pronunciation of your name, please.
Christine Keneally.
All right. All right, well, we're going to go the day after everybody's nursing their hangover, so we can see if we can get some history and everything. We had kind of some serious stuff going on. I need to do a little bit of, give me 90 seconds of Ukraine, Crimea, and everything, and then I'll introduce you, and we'll kind of take a breath, and then we'll talk some fun stuff. Okay,
right.
All right, we'll be back in just a little bit.
Thank you.
Back in 25 seconds.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear, but relatively concerned as all the stuff going on. All right, during the break, I put out and made the calls. The Mises Institute, Jeff Deist, I know from Ron Paul's congressional campaign, got the, voicemail into Lou Rockwell. I got, some other people in different campaigns and every one of them know these guys that know some guys that know. And I'm like, I need to know there's something else going on. I mean, it's related to Germany's gold. It's related to the dollar going down. It's related. So I need to know what's going to happen. There's something else. And it's not have anything to do with, the elections. I don't care. But we're going to find out. So we're going to build a show. Hopefully this week we got the Prepper Fest thing we got to go to and deal in the parties this weekend and all this kind of, but I need to know. We'll do it. And if I got to wait till next week, if it hadn't, been, radioactive ash cloud by then, we'll do it. Cause I just don't care. I'm not looking. No. And they going to make me. All right, fine. Now I'm going to ask why a bunch. Cause whatever they're telling us is going on, it doesn't add up. There's something else. So we're going to find out what it is. But now, let's tone it down. Let's relax. Let's chill. People are recovering from their hangover. St. Patrick's Day. That's why we got St. Patrick's Day anyway. I wanted to find out. We'll go the day out. We'll chill. All right. We're gonna do a postmortem. All right. We're getting an early start on next year. All right. So we have Christine Keneally. Now, she is got a lot of street cred here. Let's go ahead and read some of this, right off, she's a professor Now, she's worked throughout the world on the Great Famine. Now, you study anything about Ireland history, and you start finding out that, you know, this Great Famine thing was a big deal, and here come we got a whole bunch of influence here in the United States. She completed her PhD at Trinity College in Ireland. Christine Kennelly has worked in as an educational research institutes in Dublin, Belfast, Liverpool, and since 07 in the USA. She is currently professor of Irish history in the Casperson School of Graduate Studies at Drew University here in the U.S. In September 2013, she was appointed the founding director of Ireland's Great Hunger Institute at Quinnipiac University in Connecticut. So they got a Great Hunger Institute in Connecticut. All right, we'll hear a bit about that a little bit. Professor Kennelly has written a number of books on modern Ireland with a focus on the Great Hunger. These include This Great Calamity, The Great Irish Famine, Repeal and Revolution, 1848 in Ireland, and Daniel O'Connell, Abolition. Now, I'm sure each one of those is a separate book. You'll explain it to us. The Saddest People the Sun Sees, 2011. Her most recent book is Charity and the Great Hunger in Ireland, The Kindness of Strangers, another book. Okay, so I guess a bunch of Ireland books. Now, this is what I want to do. She's been invited to speak at both the British Houses of Parliament and the American Congress. In 2013, she was awarded the Ambassador for Ireland Award, which must be approved by the government of the Republic of Ireland. Oh, that's got some street cred. And is given to a person responsible for promoting and fostering relationships between Ireland and the U.S. She was inducted into the Irish American Hall of Fame alongside Chris Matthews and Bill O'Reilly. Well, that's interesting. Okay. She has two children. Oh, man, I don't want to say this wrong. You know, let's go ahead and go to Christine. She can give her children's names. Man, that'd be bad if I messed that up. Good. Welcome to the show, Christine. Go ahead and do these are interesting names. Can you go ahead and give us the names of your children?
Sure, and thank you for having me on your show. My children, my daughter is Siobhan, which is S-I-O-B-H-A-N, and she was born in Dublin. And my son is Ciarán, which is C-I-A-R-A-N, and Ciarán was born in Belfast.
Very cool. You know, I think we have a grandson yet to be born. They've already named. What's his name, Donna, they're calling? Yeah, Kellen Troy. So it's like Warrior or something.
That's very nice.
You know, so I'm going, all right, cool. Now, this is, let's go ahead and get some of the history. And the thing that we know most about Ireland is the potato famine. And I'm going, all right, so that had a massive immigration into the United States here, and it had that culture had a big impact to the point that we got a freaking Irish day. So let's talk about St. Patrick's Day. And if it's a saint, is it a Catholic thing? Is it, you know, Ireland has its own kind of religion thing? Is it a, you know, an Irish thing? Is it a political thing? So let's talk about St. Patrick's Day and how that came to be here and why. Maybe we'll get some geopolitical understanding there. Help us out, will you please?
Okay, so of course it's complicated because it's Irish. Everything Irish, it's never simple. But just in terms of celebrating St. Patrick's Day and the parade that accompanies it...
Can I get you to talk and yell into your microphone? You're
okay,
really low.
Okay, can you hear me now?
That's better, thank you.
Okay, so St. Patrick's Day parade was actually invented in the United States, and it predates the Irish famine. So it was invented in the late 18th century, about the time of the War of Independence. And we know that Washington, George Washington, actually, as a thanks to his Irish troops, gave them St. Patrick's Day off as a holiday. They only had 2 days holiday, Christmas Day and St. Patrick's Day. And so people to commemorate the day started to parade. And so it wasn't until the 19th century that the parade came back to Ireland in some ways. But in Ireland, it was much more of a religious festival, whereas in America, I think from the start, it was much more of a joyous festival. So it was different, but now they've come much closer together. St. Patrick himself, we know a bit about, but we don't know a lot about. We don't know when he was born, we don't know where he was born, but we know he wasn't born in Ireland. He was born somewhere in Britain. As a young man, he was captured as a slave, brought to Ireland. He escaped, went back to Britain, but apparently had a dream that he should bring Christianity to Ireland. And so he returned to Ireland, and he died in Ireland, and we think he died on the 17th of March, hence the day, the 17th of March.
Okay, now why would he be bring Christianity as Church of England, as Catholic, as, I mean, what was the dynamic there?
It really predates those divisions. So traditionally, now St. Patrick's seen as a Catholic saint, but increasingly Protestants in Ireland are saying, well, he's not really Catholic because he does predate that. Because the whole development of Protestantism didn't come about till the 16th century with the Reformation, and so St. Patrick is the 5th century. So those divisions at the time didn't count. And I think in some ways that was very healthy. They shouldn't count today.
Okay, so here we have a kind of a payoff to Irish troops, George Washington, like, hey, you know what? You need your own special day. You know, well, later we get, or whenever we get Columbus Day, so the Italians are happy. You know, I don't know if they got, it was Oktoberfest for the Germans or something. I mean, you know, I mean, there seems like there's a day for everything. Okay, so we have that, and it's exported from the United States and becomes more popular and celebrated in Ireland, and I guess a lot of other parts of the world. Is St. Patrick's Day in the Irish culture celebrated in other countries?
Oh, absolutely. In the Caribbean, it's massively celebrated in Australia and South Africa. I think the other part of this equation is because of Irish emigration. Ireland has for centuries had a history of massive, massive emigration. And so there are Irish communities everywhere. And these Irish communities took with them this desire to somehow commemorate home. And so St. Patrick's Day became that natural day for remembering home.
Okay, when we come back, we'll see if we can get better volume on her. But I'll tell you this, you know, there's a lot of questions that I have that I think she is going to be able to answer here on Declare Your Independence with Christine Kennelly. We'll be right back.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed, you can end the Fed, but why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on M-E-M-E, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Don't stop me,
'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedom of the Nest, freedomphoenix.com. All right, we're talking to Christine Kennelly. Thank you. Get my mind. Donna's working. We're gonna put some effort in. We're gonna get some understanding on this Ukraine thing. Don't you worry about it, because it's not Ukraine. It's us. Now, but throughout history, you know, you had the same factors, the same things, the same kind of people, same. You can see a thread going through a lot. It's all this collectivization of kind of, you know, how is it that you have a single crop and a single people singled out for so long? I mean, it's just, I'm going, what the heck happened? If we understand the Great Hunger through the various books by Christine, maybe we can learn something about, you know, just collectivism in general, you know? So we got the Great Hunger. These include the Great Calamity, the Great Irish Famine of 1845 to 52. This was written in 94, I guess, updated in 2006. Repeal and Revolution, 1848 in Ireland. And then there's others here. Let's go ahead and go through the titles with Christine, and we can have an understanding of what they're about. And then we'll go back and pick at them a little bit, because there's some things, many questions that I have. Let's start off with the Great Calamity, the Great Irish Famine. What was the focus of that book, of course?
Okay, so that was my very first book, and it took 15 years to research. So it was a long time coming. It's a very big book. But at the time I was writing, I was in Ireland, and there was a belief that the British government had done all they could to help Ireland during the famine. You probably know, at the time of the famine in the 19th century, Ireland was a British colony and was governed by the British government from London. So when I started my research, I started to reject that point of view, and I started to see that the British government, the policies they introduced during the famine, were inappropriate. And in fact, they exacerbated the suffering of the Irish people. And so my book really got a lot of attention. Up to that point, only two books had been written on this topic. So my book was really the third major book in 150 years since the famine.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about that, because, you know, this applies to, you know, a lot of situations around the world now. Here we have a island nation next to Great Britain. England says, you be ours. We got a musket right here says so. Okay. So I'm going, okay, you're out. And they go, they didn't do enough to help them. What were they supposed to do? What was the Irish people waiting on them to do? Was there something that was preventing them from taking care of themselves? Why did this happen? You know, when it did happen, you go, hey, the British government should have done more, or they get the winners get to write the history book, and they said, oh, we tried, and, you know, whatever, and so on. I'm just wondering, what did they not do for themselves, and why?
Okay, so Ireland had been a colony of Britain since the 12th century. So it was really Britain's oldest colony. And from the 12th century to the 19th century, the natives had been continually dispossessed of their land, given the most marginal land, denied basic human rights. They couldn't build schools, they couldn't build churches, they couldn't own land, etc., etc., etc. They couldn't vote, own a horse, own a gun, whatever. So by the 19th century, many people in Ireland were really surviving on the poorest of poor quality land. And it made sense in that context to grow potatoes. And so that's why there was such a high dependence in Ireland by people on potatoes, not because they were stupid, but because they had been left with very few options.
Okay. So let's go ahead and let's focus on that a little bit, and before we go to the next step, you know, I apologize. Is that so? We're having the central planning of we got, you know, so the problem was not like, you know, not enough government; it was too much. And they didn't get self-determination. They weren't able to do what they needed to survive. They were cattle. They were livestock. They were used. They were exploited. By what? By the British government. So I'm going, okay. So there, I would imagine there have been series of revolts. I mean, you know, revolutions. I mean, does it have to get to the IRA later? I mean, what? I mean, so the only option was either, you know, fight a war or leave, and it got to the point that they left? I mean, am I missing something in there?
No, you're absolutely right. So there were various attempts to get rid of the British government, and some of them were violent. So you've mentioned the IRA, they're the most recent. One of my books, Repeal and Revolution, is about a revolution that took place, unsuccessful, of course, in 1848. There was a big uprising in 1798. So there have been attempts to get rid of Britain by violence. They were really unsuccessful. But there are always also attempts to get rid of Ireland through constitutional means. So one of my books is about Daniel O'Connell, the liberator, as he's known in Ireland. He refused to use violence in any shape or form. So he tried to get rid of the British government through constitutional means, through political means, and that failed as well. So there have been varieties of nationalism, but each of them has tried generation after generation to get independence for Ireland.
Okay, via what means? You know, we're going to petition? I mean, the colonies here in America tried that. How'd that work out?
It didn't work out. It didn't work out in Ireland. In the 20th century, there was an election in 1918, and people overwhelmingly voted for independence. And the British government ignored that, so that led to another phase of violence we know as the Anglo-Irish War. So there have been various attempts, various ways to get rid of the British influence in Ireland. And we know Northern Ireland, that influence still continues. So it's not something that has been fully resolved yet.
But why? Why? I mean, the British guy, there had to have been some, was it pride, ego, profit? You know, because we can? I mean, I don't understand why.
all of the above. So in the 12th century, it was simply one king had very grandiose ideas about expanding westwards. So Ireland was the obvious conclusion. And then increasingly, it was seen that as Britain had enemies in France and Spain, Ireland was protecting her rear, so they wanted to keep control of the island of Ireland. And then by the 19th century, Britain was at the heart of the largest empire in the world. And there was a fear that if Ireland was allowed to leave, other parts of the empire would want to leave. And so that wasn't allowed to happen. So strategic, also this by the 19th century as well, when we come to the time of the famine, Ireland was producing massive amounts of corn, barley, oats. And they were being exported to Britain to feed the new industrial classes. So in some ways, Britain was dependent on Ireland for food by the 19th century. So it really is a number of reasons.
You know, it's a philosophical thing. You know, I'll explain myself. It's always more productive when people are doing it for their own benefit. I would think that the British Empire, and certainly Great Britain and General England there, is that it would benefit a great deal more by the productivity of leaving people alone and free trade and all this kind of... That's just not how they thought. They're just, you know, they're just continuing the serfdom or something. Hey, you're on our land and we're protecting you against, oh, like somebody else that might invade you or something, and all yours is ours now. You know, I don't see how that's working. When we come back, you know, we'll walk it up to modern times and we'll get to the point to where, you know, how is it now? And you know, has the philosophy of Great Britain and the monarchy and the parliament, whatever, has it changed? You know, will it ever change? Or will it just fall? You know, empires are going to be, you know, plopping over dead with X's over their eyes left and right as this next century goes along here. And where's Ireland going to be in all that? Okay, this is, you know, it kind of dovetails in a lot of the stuff that we do on this show is that we're always advocating. Okay, I don't... did you do any research on who we are or any of that stuff?
Just from what Donna sent me, just a bit. So I just got a bit of background.
There is, we're activists. I mean, you know, we do, I've been doing radio for a decade and more, kind of whatever. You probably would recognize a lot of our stuff. Probably the most notable is the Ron Paul revolution. You know, that logo when Ron Paul is running for president, that revolution logo. I don't know if you ever saw that. I'm the one that created that.
And
what happened was, is that I was these young revolutionaries back in the early 90s. So an activist, now I'm 53, and it's all been, I could see, you know, the change, the power is always us. It's the people's perception of government, its perception of what's legitimate authority, the perception of, you know, the solutions of just individual trade with the, you know, a 13-year-old using Bitcoin in Tehran. I mean, you know, just the perception, we don't see borders or boundaries. Oh, we're going to have sanctions, I don't care. Okay? So the thing is that Ireland is such an example of how you have this, you know, totally distinct and separate culture that just had the misfortune of being right next to the British Empire hub, you know. So it's just a neon flashing example of we rule you because we can and I got a bigger gun and bite me. You know, and then you start adding the religious thing. We'll get to that eventually, I'm sure. That's where you have, you know, I break with the Catholic Church because it won't let me do what I want to do. And separation of church and state, I don't need to do that. I just create my own church. Bite me, you know. And then you have the island, you go back and forth, ouch, quit it. And it's all the same thing. Somebody thinks they, them, those that just won't leave alone the other people. There are those who just want to be left alone. Those won't leave them alone. So I'm going, okay, who's that? And based on what? Well, I got a shiny robe and a crown and, you know, and I rule you. Why? Because I can. So I'm wondering, what is the legitimate connection between Ireland and Great Britain? Is it just solely based on force? Is it solely based on because we can? Is it solely based on we rule you? Or is there some other connection that would bind them? You know, somebody married somebody or something.
Yeah. It's all of that. It's complicated, so all of those factors come into it. At the very beginning in the 12th century, literally one of the invaders married the daughter of an Irish king to cement that relationship. So he then became the Irish king. So everything, it all factors in, but 800 years.
Well, it comes down to, I mean, I'm wondering, it really comes down to, you know, the internet and Generation Next and, you know, the young 22-year-old Irish couple that are like, I don't care. I don't respect you. I don't look at the news. I don't give a crap what you guys say. I'm trading, you know, on the internet, and I use eBay. I mean, you know, I can see that worldwide happening, certainly in countries where they have increased communications. It's just bypassing all this control stuff. And a really, really, really good example of the need to do that and the impact it could have and the justification for it is Ireland. You know, I mean, I remember growing up, you know, I'm born in 61. I'm growing up hearing about the IRA all the time. You know, Liam Neeson does a movie and all of a sudden everybody understands, you know. So I'm going, this is a very, and then of course you have Scotland doing the same deal. We got Braveheart going on there. It's kind of all the same. You got the Irish version of Longshanks doing I Rule You. Why? All right, here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hanley.
Who grew up tall and proud in the shadow of the mushroom cloud? Which now voices can be heard? Just want us to be louder and louder and louder. What the hell are we fighting for?
Oh! Just what are we fighting for?
Just truth, justice, and
hell, I even hate to say American. Wait, what the heck that means? You know, the thing is that, you know, you have a really good example here with someone that can help us understand that this kind of thing has been going on a macro scale and even a micro scale throughout human history everywhere. But, you know, think about what the unique opportunity we have here to get some insight on Great Britain, the center of the largest empire at one time or another. The sun never sets on the British Empire. You know, heck, you even got, you know, the Queen's picture on the money in freaking, you know, New Zealand and Canada and Australia. I mean, you know, even just that'll give you up for, you know, movies have been made about that. We got, you know, what happened in India and Gandhi and, you know, the conquering with the railroads and going, it's ours now, and the competition with other European countries in Africa. We got, you know, Great Britain, you know, they had them, you know, we got an empire. Colonies break free, and we do, but then the Bank of England has the debt. So I'm going, okay, but right next door to them, right across the water, right over there is Ireland. The idea that we rule you is, I mean, how did that manifest itself? They took all the good land. You know, the people that were there, hey, you're just serfs, you're just peasants, you're lucky we let you live, you know, and you do whatever the heck we say, and you got local governments there that, you know, we have the power of the king to tell you whatever. And finally, these people just start leaving. They can start going all over the world. Irish culture starts to spread. Then you have Irish cultures like, you know, got to support the homelands, kind of like how the religious factions want to do. We got to send money and, you know, and missiles and everything to Israel. Well, the same kind of thing was going on with Ireland. Armaments, money, support. For what? To be separate from what? With what? Another collective of we rule locally kind of? I mean, what? I need to understand the geopolitics because it applies to what's going on now. It's always the same. There's they, then those that want to control people because they can. But to what end? Would it make them more profitable? Did they have better trade relations? Get more goodies? You know what? I don't understand. I don't think it can be understood other than they're just crazy, okay? Thinking that they can rule people and that's going to somehow work out better for anybody. So let's go ahead and, you know, pick it up from where we had. They're taking over Ireland. Ireland's starting to resist. There's some revolution, there's some revolt, there's some. And how did those manifest themselves? It was just they killed the local gendarme, you know, or did they actually have an army? Were they doing guerrilla warfare? So all these great, was a, you know, really strong petition and they just shot the guy that delivered it? I mean, how did these revolutions manifest themselves over the years?
Okay, well, again, they're different. So 1798, very famous uprising led by a Protestant man, Theobald Wolfe Tone. They appealed to France for help, and some French soldiers did come to Ireland, but too few and too late. Their main weapon, though, was a pike. and they were using that against the finest in the British Army. So you can imagine it was unsuccessful. But that was a nationwide uprising, which failed in 1798. 1848, which is of great interest to me, again, it was a failed revolution. It was people who really had no background in warfare, and they were very easily defeated by the Irish police, not even the army. 1916, different again. The action took place in Dublin, led by Patrick Pearse, and he stood on the steps of the General Post Office and read a proclamation. He and the other leaders knew they couldn't win against Britain, but in many ways it was a symbolic, romantic gesture, saying we are still here and we still want our independence.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm... Independence for what? Have our collective or independence as individuals, or we want to take over some land, or we just want the government of Britain to go away and we'll divvy it up ourselves? I mean, what were they asking for?
They wanted the right to have their own parliament in Ireland, effectively in Dublin.
Okay, which means what? Now, we went through this in Scotland. I remember an author in Scotland moved here to Phoenix and was a journalist, local paper, blah, blah, blah. We got to talk a lot about, and Braveheart had just come out then and this kind of thing. And they go, oh, we want our own parliament. Okay, fine, you got your own parliament. Well, are they really autonomous? Is Scotland a separate country from Great Britain? Or do they just get to have meetings and talk about stuff?
Well, Scotland's unusual and interesting because they did get some form of parliamentary democracy a few years ago. But in fact, this September, there's going to be a referendum in Scotland. They now want full independence. And nobody can really predict how that referendum will go. But I think the need for people to govern themselves is a very strong impulse in people.
Down to the individual. See, that's what I'm thinking. I'm going to where if you have the, you watch Michael Collins and we're going to rule ourselves and we're in charge of ourselves. Well, then you just got, you know, guys with different accents that have the badges and the guns. I mean, I'm wondering what's the culture, what's the philosophy of Ireland? How do they want to, if they're going to govern themselves, what does that mean?
Well, 26 counties in Ireland now do govern themselves. They got independence in 1921. And it means that they are governed by people who are directly answerable to them. So one of the problems in the famine was all the decisions were being made in London, which was hundreds of miles away. And the people making those decisions had no direct compassion or interest in what was happening in Ireland. So they were very heartless, draconian policies during the famine. I think when you have a self-government, it becomes very different, because you're answerable to those people. You're seeing those people every day. So you respond very differently.
You know, well, let's go ahead and talk about that. You have Northern Ireland, Ireland. There's, you know, the kind of the British controlled, the other that's not. And Ireland was doing really well economically there for a while because they were, you know, having low corporate taxes or whatever was going on. Explain the different Irelands and just how separate they are. How much control does Great Britain have over the other Ireland?
Okay, so Ireland consists of 32 counties, and people associate with their counties, so Mayo, Waterford, Dublin, etc. We talked about all the various struggles for independence, and in 1920, the British government decided that they would create a solution to this ongoing conflict, and this internal conflict, increasingly, between Catholics and Protestants, and they partitioned Ireland. So 26 counties in the south were given independence, but they had to remain in the British Empire. 6 counties in the north, which were predominantly Protestant, remained within the United Kingdom. And that is the situation today. 6 counties, Northern Ireland, is still in the United Kingdom. The 26 counties in the south, in 1949, they took the opportunity in the post-war dislocation to declare themselves a republic. So we now have a republic in the south and Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom, in the north.
Okay, how free or separate or uncontrolled is Southern Ireland from Northern Ireland and Great Britain?
In many ways, it's 3 separate jurisdictions. And if you think of the island of Ireland, the partition really is a very false division. Because if you're in the south, you use euro currency. If you go to the north, you use British currency. So within this tiny island of Ireland, there are 2 currencies, 2 phone systems, 2 transport systems, 2 different parliaments, each costing a lot of money. So it is...
Is it separate from Great Britain, you know, political control, though?
The Republic is definitely separate.
Okay, so Northern Ireland, which includes Belfast and so on, you know, if you go across the strait there to Scotland, it's only about, I don't know, 30 miles, it looks like. So it's kind of, you know, from you take a little sailboat ride from Belfast to Scotland, you can do it in half a day, okay? You know, the sailboat. So, I mean, it's not that far, but that's, you know, far enough you're not swimming it, okay? So I'm going, okay, so we have Northern Ireland that's still connected with Ireland, and it is considered... So what has been the big concern of it? Are we trying to force Northern Ireland into the rest of Ireland? Does anybody care? Is there a Berlin Wall? A wall that's up between the two? Or is it kind of grown into different cultures? Does anybody care anymore? Is there a controversy? Does it matter? We're going to find out when we come back with Christine Kennelly on St. Patrick's Day, kind of got us into Irish politics. We'll be right back.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Christine?
Yes.
Okay, this is, we're getting a lot of, you know, good here. I'm enjoying this. We're learning something. But that's the one thing that I think is of great interest to me is this an issue now? Does anybody care? Is Northern Ireland scammering, you know, we need to be part of Ireland, and British saying no, or they don't care anymore, or Southern's fine and peace out and there's a wall, or what?
So, yes, people do care about Ireland and whether it becomes unified again. Because if you think Ireland was unified for thousands of years, partition has only been in place since 1921. So partition is very recent, and it's a very false partition. Britain, since the peace process, has agreed that it will allow a majority decision to take place in terms of the future of Northern Ireland, which is a great advance. But as you've referred to, it took years of violence in Northern Ireland, the period known as the Troubles, to bring us to this point.
All right. I don't understand why. And what are the institutions that they're trying to protect? I mean, when they get done, let's say, you know, Northern Ireland becomes part of Ireland, there's going to be some guys that are the shiny badge wearers in Northern Ireland don't like that.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's going to have to be done with a lot of careful negotiation and a lot of compromise, because we know there are a group of Protestants in Northern Ireland who traditionally have seen themselves as British, who do not want to be Irish. And that was what led to the partition in 1921, a desire to sort of appease this Protestant minority, and by creating Northern Ireland to make them a Protestant majority. So they, you see their future as being British. But the wider context is the world is changing. Britain is changing. If Scotland vote to leave Britain, then what is Britain anymore? And that's a real possibility. The European Union, now people identify with that. We've seen what's happening in Russia.
Yeah, see, I don't see it as land. It seems like it's like Britain is a freaking bank. I mean, you know, it's finances. It's, you know, they don't care. You know, all right, here we go. We'll talk about it on there. Here we go.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Back in the saddle again with Christine Kennelly. We're talking about Irish famine, Irish history, Irish Ireland and Great Britain and Great Britain. You know, this is, I'll tell you what the interest to me is. It's really simple. It's like, you know, people that would, you know, declare their independence. It's very unique that you have the British Empire. You know, that sun's never set on. I mean, it's a huge, big, giant, and we're in charge, and we have a history of, you know, I rule you, okay? Well, then you have Ireland's island right next to them, and it's kind of partitioned off. You got like, 15-20% of the northern part of Ireland is under British rule. I mean, undisputed, kind of, I mean, you know, I like it, but it's like, you know, yep, you're part of Great Britain and here, and you use our money and our banks and our taxes and our rules and our, and you're ours. Okay. Then you have the other part of Ireland that's relatively autonomous, I think. I'm not really getting it. And then the battle is over whether Northern Ireland, you know, is part of Southern, is what the people want it or not. It's going to be like a, you know, Ukraine vote of, you know, something, we want to be this, or, you know, Crimea goes, we're 97-something%, we want to be with this guy. You know, that 3% that, you know, wanted to go the other way, I guess just screw them, you know. So I'm just going, are they just looking for rule of another shiny badge with the right accent or something? I mean, what are they fighting for? And why are they fighting? And what do they get if they win either side? I don't, because this is going to be a very interesting vote. And it bodes for the future of the planet. There's a whole bunch of these going on all over. I mean, we're looking at it in Crimea and Ukraine. That's going on right now. Same kind of thing. Who belongs to whom? You know? And why would they belong to anybody? And is there anybody arguing, hey, can I not belong to anybody? You know? So you understand my concern, Christine. It's like, you know, I want to get out of, you know, this frying pan and jump into this fire. And is there anybody out there advocating, can I not be ruled by anybody? I mean, is that even a possibility? Does even anybody even bring that up? Some anarchist somewhere?
There are a few anarchists who probably do, but I would say they're in the minority.
Oh, I don't care about that.
Okay, but I think most people want to have a government that represents them. And again, Irish history is complex, but when the partition was introduced to Ireland, Northern Ireland was put under a Protestant majority, and the Catholics were denied their basic civil rights, even the extent a lot of Catholics didn't have the right to vote. And so that gave rise in the 1960s to the civil rights movement in Northern Ireland, which was, you know, directly borrowed from the American civil rights movement, even the songs. So Ireland has been badly misgoverned so long, and I think people do want an opportunity just to govern themselves. And even if they make mistakes, at least it's their mistakes.
Well, I'm when you say their mistakes, you know, it's just like saying, I'm seeing, I'll give you an example. In the first hour we were talking about this, is that when we refer to the actions of government, and certainly the United States and all this craziness that's going on around the world, you know, it's starting to be very common to be referred to as the USG, United States government, not USA. And no matter how many Republican conventions out there screaming USA, USA, you know, a lot of the American people, it's starting to become, you know, just, it just kind of evolved to that. That's not, America's not me. United States government, that's not me. It's not, you know, we're a culture as a free human beings, autonomous, blah, blah, blah. You know, they start referring to it as the United States government. The United States government says, United States, well, we are at war with, and Vietnam and our war, and we're not taking ownership of it anymore. And I'm wondering, as Great Britain does this with Ireland, it's like you have factions, and I'm wondering if there were any faction or an understanding or the advocacy for just self-rule. You know, this kind of libertarian leave-me-aloneism, none of you guys have been in my best interest for millennia. It's been your millennia of just, you know, bad rule. How about we just do something else and you not? You know, so I don't see, you know, this. It's just trading one shiny badge for another one that has a different accent. You see my point?
I do, but I think you just think back to the 18th century. And when American colonists were seeking self-government, they wanted self-government. They didn't want no government. And I think there's a parallel with Ireland today. There always has been that parallel. People want to govern themselves.
Well, down to the individual, I mean, that was the argument. That was the Declaration of Independence. I mean, it's very clear. Didn't say what kind of government they were going to have, just how to recognize when it was bad. When it's not serving the rights of the individual, life, liberty, pursuit of happiness, it's time to alter or abolish. It's your right. It's your duty to alter or abolish. So then they get the Articles of Confederation, and they go, nah, it's not good enough. Art Hamilton's like, you know, how can you fund a sustained war if you don't have the power to tax everybody? Well, here, that was the best reason for not doing it. You know, so I'm going, and then they, you know, immediately go into debt to the Bank of England to pay off the war debt, blah, 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 and then we just went right down this road. So to equate the Declaration of Independence and the Revolution with the Constitution, not only was it separated by a decade or more, it was separated by light years of philosophy. So when we go to Great Britain and Ireland, I see the same kind of, well, you know, the United States government, they created this, you know, central plan of the, I go, no, they didn't. That came later. So I'm going, with Ireland, is that what they're asking for? Are they looking for, you know, the consolidation of Ireland under control of, and what kind of government does Southern Ireland have? And if Northern Ireland votes to break from Great Britain, would they automatically be part of the rest of Ireland under that government? Is that what they're advocating?
Not necessarily. So it's a lot of big questions. There's no precedent for that. So Northern Ireland could be autonomous within the confines of the European Union. So I think that's a separate question to be decided. But I think the important question is for Britain to give Ireland, Northern Ireland, its independence again, for London not to be making decisions.
Okay, so it's not a vote for them to go join Southern Ireland. It's a vote for them to be autonomous from Great Britain.
Yeah, and I think unity is a separate issue, and I think one that will take some years to work out, because people who've been separated, even for less than 100 years, who, as you say, there are religious differences, economic differences, all these things have to be carefully negotiated. But I think it's for the people of Ireland to negotiate them, not for people in Britain to do so.
No, I agree. But when you say that, you may not mean the same thing I do. When I say it's for the individual 19-year-old young girl in Dublin in the apartment or whatever, for her to determine. And I go, no. It's for the government that, you know, represents her, that got the shiny badge, just got a gun pointed at her and said, we rule you, and now we're not ruled by Great Britain, but you're still ruled by us. Oh, okay, I feel so much better now, you know? So I'm just, what's the government? What kind of government does Southern Ireland have and compared with Northern Ireland? How different is it?
Well, the Parliament in Belfast is ultimately answerable to the Parliament in London, so they have very limited powers. The Parliament in Dublin is autonomous. And what's interesting, because the Irish Constitution, is whenever there's a constitutional change, there has to be a referendum upon which everybody over the age of 18 has the right to vote. So there's quite a lot of referendums. So in that sense, it's a very interesting democracy. And also, the voting system, it's not simply one man, one vote. It's a transfer vote. So it leads to some very interesting outcomes.
Well, describe that. What do you mean, transfer vote? What does that mean?
So if I have five people who are standing for election, I don't just pick number one who I like. I grade each of them, so from one to five. And if I really dislike two of them, I just vote for the top three. And so it then becomes a very complex process in counting the votes. But I think it's a much more balanced system. So it's a very interesting democratic system, quite different from what they have in Britain.
You know, one thing I remember as we were doing a lot of the voting, you know, there's different alternatives to how you would vote, you know, a similar thing like that here. And it gets to the point where you really, I mean, you could probably guess manually check it, but you really need computers. Then it was found out that the election computers for Ireland were in the Netherlands or something. I mean, you know, it wasn't even there, and then it's all the election fraud machines and the blah, 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 blah. So I'm not a big giant fan of elections determining anything anyway. I don't trust them unless a local and the little old lady sitting there counting it by hand. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So
they used machines once. It was a massive disaster. So they haven't used them since. That was just, that was an exception. They just used them once. But generally, Irish elections are very exciting because it is that little old lady sitting there counting and transferring and recounting.
Excellent.
And it's all done. People can go and watch. I've watched. It's very interesting.
You know, I would have much more confidence in that than I do in this, you know, it's the European Union doing it for me. I'm like, all right, well, you can just kiss it goodbye right there, you know. So, all right, well, I hope the individual, I'm just hoping there's somebody, you know, that, you know, has an Irish accent. I mean, I'm my line is Kirkpatrick, you know, my grandmother Irish, and you know, I grew up a lot of this stuff, but I'm telling you, I'm for the individual. You know, where does that one kid living in Dublin, what say do they get to have? Oh, it's what what everybody in the majority in the Canada going, yeah, well, what if they don't like it? Well, tough. Okay. So now they're just occupied by a government. You know, can we ever be free from, you know, just that mindset? Well, it comes down to us as individuals to do that, or at least ask the questions. Answering a bunch of the questions, Christine Kennelly. Check today's archive for her books. Go ahead and order them if you're interested. There's a lot of interesting history there for us. Thank you very much. That was entertaining and informative. You know, it comes back up again. We'll have you. I'm sure this is probably a little bit different than some of the other interviews you did.
Yes, very. You're very political. That's fine.
No, it's philosophical.
No,
see,
I agree.
This is the whole, and Great Britain has, you know, such a dominant part of our history. I mean, it's, you know, Northern America, you know, heck, the whole Western Hemisphere has, little England is certainly North America. You have the, you know, Eurasia, India, Australia, I mean, you know, the whole, and then, you know, all that microcosm of all that discussion comes down 30 miles off their coast. You know, it's called Ireland. And then this all goes, and it's about, you know, we want to be free from what? That shiny badge. Okay, to go where? To this shiny badge. Yay.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing is going to happen with Northern Ireland. Well, it needs to be negotiated. Between what? Not the people. It's going to be this shiny badge or that shiny badge to make sure I get to keep my shiny badge.
Well, let's hope the democracy works a bit better, because people in Ireland are very politicized. You'd like them. I mean, they really are political, and they're very motivated to do something.
I wouldn't call me political. I'm apolitical.
Okay, philosophical. People in Ireland are very philosophical.
Yeah, no, I'm not about, I'm about changing culture. I'm not about changing, you know, somebody told me here recently, it was a great, he goes, yeah, we turned over the compost pile. And I'm like, what? And he goes, yeah, we had an election. You know, we just took the compost pile and turned it. And I'm going, yep, still got a compost pile.
Yeah. Well, true as well.
Hey, well, thanks for spending time with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Donna will send you the links to everything, and you can play with it wherever you want.
That's great. Well, nice to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.